Evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call to order the September the 8th, 2020 meeting of the Berkshire County Board of Commissioners. I hope for everybody who's planning to be with us is joined by Zoom. We have a few members of the staff here in the office. We always want to start off with our roll call for the record. So, commissioners, when I call your name, would you please answer whether you're here or virtual? Commissioner Trent,
here in person.
Commissioner Lee,
here in person.
Commissioner Atkins,
here.
Commissioner Bazemore,
virtual.
All right. How are you doing?
I'm well. Hope you are.
Doing great. Thank you. Well, we have the full board here. So I want to say first to all of our citizens and other employees and whoever is listening, I hope you had a wonderful Labor Day. I hope that vacation was enjoyable and restful. It's good having a little long holiday once in a while. So, but we're back and ready for business. So we want to kick off the meeting, as we always do, with our invocation and Pledge of Allegiance. Our Commissioner Bazemore, would you lead us with that, please?
Sure. Let us pray. Loving and gracious God, you are indeed the giver of all good gifts. And we thank you today, Lord, for your blessings, for all the successful outcomes of our community projects. And Lord, we want you to thank you for the wonderful employees. We ask that you bless them abundantly, and we continue to seek your wisdom, guidance, courage, and strength. Be with us, O Lord, as we deliberate our findings today, and help us to be wise in our decisions we make for the good of all those who have placed their trust in us. And thank you, O Lord, for the leadership we have here. And we thank you for looking out for our county, making it more resilient, and saving the lives of those here in Berkshire County. All these things we ask in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen. Let us pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner Bazemore, for that invitation, and thank you, Commissioner. As always, one of the early things on our agenda is our public comment section. We have two. One early in the meeting that we're going to call now, and then one late in the meeting. So if you have any issues that you'd like to discuss with us early on, this is the time. Or as we go through the meeting and things pop to mind later on, and we'll have another opportunity for you to send us a message. So, Sarah, if you would open up the lines for people that can send you messages, just send them directly to our clerk. Sarah, you want to walk them through that process?
Sure, yes. So public comments are now being accepted through our Berkshire County Government Facebook page. We do have a post set up for tonight's meeting where public comments are welcome, and that is something I'll be monitoring throughout today's meeting. And then comments can also be emailed directly to me, and my email address is on our Facebook post. And for those who are listening who may not have Facebook, it's sarah.tinkham@berkshire.nc.gov. And you can email those comments and share, just so that you are aware, we did receive one comment already, and whenever you would like me to read that, I can do so.
Well, sir, why don't we go forth with that first one, and if others come in, we'll address those as well. What is the first
one? Okay, the first one is from Leanne Lowers, and she is mentioning the Thompson Street area of homes, so Thompson Street, and she is asking about how the selection process moves forward with some homes being bought out and others that have not, and mentioning that the area is an eyesore for Windsor, and she's concerned about potential crime in the area. And she wanted to bring this comment to your attention for tonight's meeting.
Okay. First question I'm going to ask, and Mitch, you're here. Thompson Street, is that in the county or is that in Winfield?
I'm looking it up right now. I think it's out there across from Powell Stuff.
So that's at the ETJ?
The ETJ, I think it's the county. Well, so ETJ would be...
Yeah, but those houses across from Stokes are covered under the Windsor FEMA relief, so that is in their area, all right? So there's some that have been raised, and most of them have been bought out. And so I believe, sir, that this, and this is, who's making that request again to us? I didn't get the name, I'm sorry.
Her name is Leanne Lowers, L-O-W-E-R-S.
Okay, Lowers. Good. Ms. Lowers, I believe that area of Thompson Street is under what's called the ETJ, or the area that's connected with the town of Windsor. And those houses across from Powell and Stokes in that area have all been included under FEMA's response to the town of Windsor. And if you know, some of those have been bought out. Some of those have been raised. Several have been torn down. And I do know in our last meeting, County Manager, that the town spoke about there are still others that they're waiting for designation, I guess is the right term, in terms of what's going to happen to those. So that's about all I can tell you is, Ms. Lawrence, is to, I would check with the town of Windsor, because I think that's the jurisdiction that this falls under rather than the county. Yeah, Alan Castillo, the County Manager, is probably the best person to contact.
Town administrator.
Oh, good. sorry. The town administrator is the best person to contact. All right? Okay. So I want to make sure we give it enough time for citizens who have questions coming in to, so we're going to wait. And you let us know when we have the next one, please.
Sure, no problem.
Any additional questions?
No, sir. I have no additional public comments at this time.
Okay. Well, again, I will remind the listening public that we will have another public comment section near the end of our meeting. So if any other things come to mind or anything addressed during the course of the meeting that you have further questions about, you'll have another opportunity. Thank you. Thank you. We'll go on. First to reports and appointments. We have Caroline Stevenson of Cultivator Bookmobile, which is a children's book initiative and a recent Bergen County event. Ms. Stevenson, are you on the line?
Good evening. Yes, sir.
Good evening. The floor is yours.
Thank you for your time. This will be short but sweet. Basically, Cultivator Bookmobile is a children's bookmobile. We're based in Hertford County, but we serve Bertie, Northampton, and Hertford County. So we've been in Bertie County twice since we became a bookmobile in May. We have been to the farmer's market, and we also were in Roxable just a couple of weeks ago. So I just wanted to make you all aware of who we are and what we do. We're a all-volunteer organization. Basically, we take gently used children's books and we give them away at daycares, housing authorities, mobile home parks, farmers markets, church parking lots, schools. We're very concerned about the COVID. All of these giveaways are outside, and we wear masks and we try to be as contactless as possible because as you know, our numbers here in Northeastern North Carolina for COVID are not great right now, but we want to serve the children of this area because we think that, you know, they've been greatly impacted out of school So the books that we give away are for children to take home. We do not ask for them back. We don't charge any fees for the service. We are a 501c3 nonprofit corp, so we operate on grants and donations. But our mission is to create greater book access in Northeastern North Carolina. And we've been open since as a nonprofit since 2016.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Stevenson. Thank you for the work that that you're doing. And I got to tell you, I'm very familiar with the bookmobile. My mother was a librarian here in the area for 42 years. The bookmobile was one of the big deals when I was a kid growing up. Came into some of the rural communities where we didn't have access and come in town to the library or it's a great thing. Thank you for the work that you're doing.
Yeah, I think the idea of a bookmobile in this area is actually a better model. We had a bookstore in Murfreesboro that we closed in April due to the COVID, and we decided to start the bookmobile because we felt that we could actually reach more people and cover more ground that way and go to places where people may not have great transportation to get to their public library. So we support the public library system and all that they do in Northeastern North Carolina, but we also try to supplement that in order to give kids books in their homes.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a great plan in a rural community like us with kind of pockets of, you know, municipalities up around the county, a lot of them on the fringes of the county. So that's a great service. So, okay, thank you very much. Okay, next on our reports and appointment is an update from Emergency Services Director Ms. Cooper on the hurricane and tornado relief efforts. Next.
Yes, sir. Thank y'all for being here tonight and having me come in and do this update. What I'm concentrating on here lately is the ones that are destroyed, major damage, or uninhabitable. And right now we got 41 total displaced families. We've got 8 of those placed in the mobile travel trailers. We're working this week to set up 7 more. And we got 10 families that are currently in motel rooms as of today, this afternoon at 3 o'clock. The state has taken over helping with the expenses of motel rooms as of September 4th. Did that run over the 30 days for the FEMA assistance? 16 of these families are with friends and family, and 19 of the families are not moving into campers and are seeking other opportunities. The county was declared for state individual assistance. That was open for 2 weeks, is now closed. And the county, as far as the response, is seeking a FEMA declaration for emergency response and debris cleanup. And the total request at this point that we've sent up to FEMA is $160,855. The things we need right now as far as emergency management is we need to transition our case management over to another department that handles case management. This might be a conversation we need to have between DSS or looking at other opportunities and other departments in the county. Our staff has been kind of started up with case management. That is not our specialty. We started all of those files, we have them ready, but we're getting to the point where we need to hand that over to somebody that understands case management for long term. And another thing that we need drastically, we need help with, is the mental health for the affected. And the reason I bring that up is because they need more than a phone call. I know we asked for Trillium Health in the beginning. We were unable to get Trillium Health here physically because of some type of FEMA funding or something they don't have anymore. So, but I've got residents now that can't sleep. They're having nightmares. They're having issues. And some of them are getting a phone call, but phone calls, they need another step.
Okay. Mitch, can you reach out to Battle Vets at Albemarle Regional Health? We have a mental health part of the health department, he may be able to help you.
Sure. Yeah, Mitch, have you actually, have we spoken with Trillium? Because they have a crisis management team that comes
they
out.
Won't come. I've requested them through the state. They lost all their FEMA funding. They will not come. We requested them twice.
Mitch, let me ask you a question. You got 41 families displaced, correct?
Yes, sir.
What's the average number per family?
I'd say four. We've got five that are over six and eight.
Okay, so you got how many people with those five? Four or five, you got close to 160 people.
Right.
And with four or five, you got 200 people displaced. A lot of people just think it's 14 people. We got 160 of 200 people displaced.
Yeah. We got, it's 41 families. We're looking at them as total families.
Yeah,
yeah, you're right.
Another question, Mr. Powell. I'm sure you please, I'm kind of really understanding this because even before FEMA, Trillium has always had a crisis management team that they call out that will come at any time. My wife calls them all the time, and they come right out to see any patient who needs immediate assistance.
I've requested them twice.
But are we requesting them under their FEMA fund? That's the thing.
So we made a call to Trillium. We've asked the state to call Trillium for us, and they told us they couldn't come out.
If you don't mind, I'd like to call in. I know Bland's been here before several times. But I do know for a fact, on a daily basis, we're sending out crisis management teams when the sheriff calls, when my wife calls, and anybody else. That's part of their regular duty. It's all handled by one company, who's actually a Hertford County-based company. But they do all of that crisis management teaming.
We'll be more than glad to yield this opportunity to take care of it.
We'll see if that's something we can address. Okay.
That's part of that whole CIT training and our law enforcement.
That we wanted something under FEMA, but they do that. They've been doing this with all state. In fact, when he comes, when Bland comes, he shows us all the number of cases that they do on the crisis management team.
I'm not sure. I know they were requested twice.
Right.
And the only thing I've been able to do is call DSS.
Right.
And they'll get somebody that makes a phone call to them. But. I think we've got some more serious cases that require more than a phone call.
Thanks for raising the issue. We'll see if we can get some answers.
Great. That's pretty much my update as far as we're at right now. We're working as hard as we can to get the other seven campers put up. That's been done entirely by the staff here in Berkeley County with Anthony and Ricky and his crowd and my crowd. You go out there and move blocks and move over disaster debris and set a camper up and then get it inspected. And that's taking a toll on our staff just doing that.
You mentioned eight families in and seven, so we now have 15 trailers. Is that right?
I got two more from the Methodist men that loaned us, and one of those is being set up this week.
It is a tough setup thing, and my church fed just one day when they were setting up the very first day out there. We brought on, I think, 24 meals out there. We were serving meals for some of the victims, displaced people at our church, but we sent meals out to the folks there now. Survivors, yeah. That's quite a job. What are your unmet needs right now in terms of what you really need? Any additional assistance, whatever?
Case management.
That's the biggest thing.
Because you got 19 families that are looking other arrangements besides the...
Right. We had a conversation with DSS about that, or...?
Yeah, we've set up what our big issues are, but I think we need to have a sit-down or a conversation because this is going to need to be start to be a daily phone call. What are your plans?
Right.
Because these hotel rooms are going to run out, and they're going to be without anything, and we need to start pushing a direction and finding opportunities or what opportunities are out there. I know tomorrow we have a meeting with Samaritans First about doing rebuilds. They've already committed to at least being here a year, but you know that's not going to be a fast process.
I need to find something temporary.
We need to have that conversation with DSS. So we can't. They may need to staff up, and who knows what that needs to be. If they can't have them, then we have to look.
How many units does Samaritan First commit to?
They haven't said how many.
Just the time.
They just committed to time. They committed, they said they would work on rehabs, rebuilds, and that they would bring options for mobile homes to be replaced.
We don't have any numbers.
We don't have any numbers. I'm hoping tomorrow they're going to.
We have a meeting with them tomorrow.
They've got our information, so I'm hoping tomorrow when we go into the meeting, they're going to give us what they think they can do. We're bringing the Baptist and the Methodist in on the meeting because there's opportunities for some rehab opportunities also. So if a house is still standing and is affected, we can have certain groups go in there and help get those fixed while we have other groups do rebuilds and major repairs or setups for mobile homes.
I think it gets to 11 o'clock tomorrow at the DSS.
So I would just like, for the public that's listening, and you know, these groups are coming into our county, they desperately need volunteers to help them do this work. So if you're able, you don't have to know what to do, you just have to be willing to do. They'll teach you and they'll, anyway, they desperately need some volunteers. COVID has put a bind on them because they're normal volunteers, can't come in. So please consider volunteering with these groups.
Great. We do not have on the agenda the discussion around relief fund.
Yes, we can all discuss that all together.
And you want to do that now?
Yes, sir, or after. If Steve can give you a little bit of an update on the debris pickup and monitoring, if you can.
Thank you, Mr. Steve. Would you give us that?
I come to bring you really good news. As you all know, before a storm happens, long before a storm happens, you have to have a pre-event contract in place that y'all signed off on 5 years ago, I think it was. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Mitch. But and so the company that you had that contract with was Johnny on the Spot. They came in and looked at what we had. You know, you can't just jump out there and do it real quick. You got to give these volunteer groups and people time to get the stuff to the side of the road or to the right of way. And that being said, I am very happy to report to you that we finished up the C and D debris today. So we are asking people now not to put C and D on the right of way anymore. And I'll get the numbers for you. We had a great working relationship with the landfill. They saved us about 3 employees, to be honest, because the way the state likes for you to do is have someone ride behind each truck and make sure they're not stopping and picking up and all this. You know, we did it by tonnage, and so Miss Tammy at the landfill did an outstanding job for us, and I certainly want to give her credit. As far as the woody debris that you see out on more roads than where we had the major homes that were destroyed, supposedly, and this is from 11:22 today, the question was asked, when were they going to start Bertie County to clean up the woody debris? And email from Department of Transportation, they are currently in Hertford County. They will be finishing today and will be in Bertie tomorrow. It has taken 3 days to get Hertford County. If it took 3 days to get Hertford County, it's going to take 3 months to get us today, because there's a lot of it out there. I mean, extremely a lot of it. But, hopefully tomorrow they will be in our county. The only thing that I would recommend is people understand they're only going to make the one swoop through. DOT actually put this out on the contract, and there's a company somewhere very far western part of the state that got this. So they're only going to make one ride through and pick up everything. So if you happen to see them go by and there's some stuff left behind, if you'll let me know, I'll make sure that we let DOT know that.
Before they get out of here.
Exactly. Exactly, before they get gone.
Steve,
That's for complete county, correct?
That's correct.
And then my other question is, are they also contracted to take care of Morningside Road? For all those trees and everything that's all over the place?
Anything that is in the right of way.
Last time I rode down there, everything was in the right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
It's all.
They are. According to DOT. And.
That's the reason your number came down quite a bit then.
Since we were not, there was not a federal declaration, then DOT has to take this part of it. It's not us.
Okay. Could you give us a number close to $1 million at one time?
We got a quote for $820,000, and then we got a, once we got the governor's office to put it on DOT for wood and debris, then we got a second quote for C and D, and because of the volunteer agency being able to bring stuff to the road, that quote went down from $326,000 down to $15,000.
It's gonna be more than that.
Okay. And the DOT takes responsibility of this work out of course.
See, we had an awful lot of calls about the potholes and things like that on Morning Road and on Wood Road. And I know I called DOT, and they said they received a lot of calls from citizens, and they were aware, but they wanted to wait until the heavy equipment was out of there before they went in, didn't want to do any patchwork and then have to redo it. So we want to make sure that we do follow up with them.
Absolutely.
That they are committed to both those roads as they said they would be, once we got all the heavy trucks on, right? Because if you ride, especially down Morning Road.
Oh, yeah.
Road's pretty torn up a little bit. So that's understandable.
Morning and Wood are both in bad, bad shape.
Yeah, we're gonna make it worse.
And since you brought that up, you know, for those that are listening, or Sarah, we post on our Facebook page, when you see these people working, please slow down.
Yeah.
I mean, we have been out there every day, and it's no fun when a car sees all these lights flashing and it still wants to run 70 miles an hour down Wood Road. I mean, it's dangerous for the people that are doing the work.
I agree. Let's talk a little bit about the relief fund and kind of where we stand. And why don't you make sure you step in for me if I don't get something right, but we've done two major distributions of funds, right? And I think those have gone fairly well. Got better once we, you know, identified people, who's responsible person, et cetera, et cetera. So right now we have about $95,000 remaining in the fund. I have another $5,000 that will go in this week, so roughly we're talking about $100,000 still left. The one expense that I know that we have obligated ourselves to, that we're going to spend this money, is on the rent for the lots. Now, we expect that to be $125 per, and that's how many trailers?
Right now, seven.
Seven.
Right, it could go to eight, but right now, they are seven, so we've covered the rent.
But potential 15.
No.
No, that's just the one that we're.
Some of them are not on my personal property.
Right.
Gotcha.
Everybody right now is where they were originally at.
So we could say eight, is that correct?
Yes.
Eight times $125. Okay, that's $1,000. And we want to say just the worst case. We said six, but let's look at a year just in case, right? That's $12,000, right? So we set aside $12,000 out of that number, okay? And that gives us still $88,000, right? We are ready for another distribution. So let's talk about what that should be. My thought initially, just throw it out on the table, is that we need to go back to those 41 displaced and make sure we're taking care of them, especially going in the trailers, or they're gonna be in, so we need to be able to put some additional money in their pocket. I would say that, I'd like to recommend that if we looked at $1,000 each of that, that's $41,000, right? And knowing that we have a reserve, if you will, for the other lots, that still would give us $47,000. And we still have funds coming in. So we've been doing this kind of on a weekly distribution basis. Can you think of anything else, Mitch, that we should be setting aside for?
I think you're on the right track. I think it's gonna come down to case management, which is something we've already discussed that we need to work on.
Yeah.
And I think the meeting tomorrow may be an opportunity to look at what funds can help.
because the people that are going to be here tomorrow are all working on donated funds anyway. They, I mean, so you might have an opportunity for them to come in and build a new house, but all these houses are going to need furniture. All these houses are going to need, you know, the supplies to go with them. They're going to need, you know, everything to make it a home. And that might be an opportunity for case management to say that they're going to buy bedroom suits, living room suits, or whatever to go in. And there may be other opportunities for other organizations that are going to donate that. But we may have to find somebody to help put it together. We may have to, you know, find a way to get here. You know, there's always the little nuts and bolts. And so, you know, putting money in hand is great, and that's what exactly what they need. But we want to make sure that whatever we need to do to push that process tomorrow forward, because if we get this process tomorrow and they come in here and give us an awesome deal saying, hey, we're going to come in and replace these mobile homes, rebuild these homes, and rehab these other homes, Bertie County needs to make sure they take every bit of that opportunity, because that's going to be the golden goose right there. I mean, if you got 42 people, 42 families without a home, you know, so, my prayers got answered when that man called and said we're coming, because that's 42 families didn't have anywhere to go in Bertie County.
I agree with Mitch. I think if we not distribute, I mean, because we don't know if people are hanging on to this money for a rainy day or for future needs for furniture or, you know, we don't know it. So if we give it all out, and then these 42 folks, they find another home. They, like he said, they need furniture. They need all the stuff that, I mean, it costs a lot of money.
But let's be clear. When we started this fund, we said this fund was for the survivors, for their purposes. We said three areas. Food, temporary shelter, and personal needs. Okay, that's what we said. And we've now collected somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 and how much?
About 107.
No, an additional. So it was somewhere about 100.
Oh, about 150.
All right. So we have 150. So we've only given out $50,000. So, I mean, I know, but knowing a little bit about Samaritan, then you're right, we'll see what they say tomorrow. But I know I've been approached by a lot of the survivors to say, gee, I need repairs. I can pay for the materials, but I can't pay for the labor, right? But I'm not sure that we're going to be in a position to pay for somebody building somebody a new home. We're not going to have those kinds of funds, are we? I mean, not if we have to pay for...
You're not going to pay for the homes, but you may be able to provide a furnishing or a segment of it or something that... They may not have a specialty they do. It might be a very minute thing that you can spread out. But that's not divided up against them. Because, you know, like I said, this 42 doesn't cover, these are 41 families that don't have anything.
Right.
I'm not talking about, I know there's a much bigger list of 200 names that need a couple of shingles, need a little bit of siding, or, you know, need something repaired on it. But these are the ones that don't have...
So those 42, but then I think Jody gave us a list of 92 that had, quote, significant damage, right?
The uninhabitable ones were...
Yeah, well, we got the 8 uninhabitable.
I know, no, those were completely destroyed.
Right.
Uninhabitable was 92.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, they're not all uninhabitable. Okay, my understanding was there was original 27. Destroyed. There was another 8 that you could not go back in. Then the 92 included everything from partial roof outs, windows out. That was significant damage.
That was water intrusion with things that
were here. Right. But a lot of folks are still in those houses.
Correct. Yeah. That led to
the sale. Let me ask you a question. Won't it be better to make a decision on this after we have Samaritan first?
Oh, yeah. Just want to put it out there, because I can tell you, part of what I'm hearing is that the citizens say, we're getting more relief from some of the other people who are handing out cards, handing out money, than we're getting for the primary fund, which is the county's fund. We've only done two distributions. So I think we need to make a decision. if we're going to give more money into the hands of the victim, I think we need to do, decide on what that is. If we need to save a bit from other things or something, I hear exactly what you're saying. We need to do that, just like we're saving for the lift, the rent. But we need to make those decisions because those 92, some of those 92 jobs, a few haven't gotten much of anything. Not much. Who we still said we were going to help, right? So I think we need to be as urgent as we can about making these decisions. How much are we going to hold back? And let's do that, whatever that is. And how much are we going to distribute? Let's get it out there in people's hands. Because I know at my church, they're the release station for the West Roanoke Association. And folks are coming in there every day saying, I need this. They're just dealing with those same major folks. And they're giving out over $6,000 already. And you know, people come in and say, well, I thought the county. We don't need that. You know, this is what this is for.
Just for a point of clarity, initially, there was a group of 92. There was. However, since that time, that number has decreased some. Some of the homes were vacant, no one was living there. Some of them were businesses and that type of thing. So that number has come down, and their families are still living in those. So that number was for affected, so meaning they had some significant damage, but they were having.
Okay, so let's get a good number. But we didn't have a solid number that was not updated then.
Yeah, let's get a good number of those, right, so we know what we're dealing with. Right? But your point is well taken. That those folks who we are going to need some help with that long range piece too. And this is what can serve you to use that.
So those funds that the county has already distributed, have we managed to find everybody and get those funds out?
There are a few, there are some, I'll say, in the 100, in that third group, the 100 to 150, who, when this list was generated, it only came up with the address of the home, as well as the actual owner. But we know some of these homes are rented. You know, they have owner, but they're rented. So we've given out a good number in that 100 and 150 because Jody and his team have been out knocking on doors, putting flyers up in to call the DRC, the scheduling appointment, to apply. And then that's when we, you know, actually made the disbursement of the card. So there are a number who we have not, you know, reached out and again, been to the home, but they weren't there or did not call the center. So we're still trying to reach them.
And we knew how important it was to get people registered, right? So that was kind of an incentive to get people to register. We called them and said, we have a gift for you from the fund. Come out to register and we'll have it there for you.
Knights of Columbus was there also, and they have distributed all of their $26,500 to folks that showed up. So, yay.
Right. John, I think you possibly want to take them. Wait until we have that meeting with Samaritan tomorrow. But we need to be thinking about how we, you know, what are we going to do once we got firm numbers? How much do we want to hold back? And then the other funds we need to get in the hands of those folks. And I think they are needed. We've still got car payments. We've got all kinds of things. We've still got to make.
I think that's going to come back to that case management. That's really where it drives home at, and you know, and I don't mean this the wrong way. The winds quit blowing and the lights are souring and quit flashing and making sound, and then you start to get above and beyond what this specialty is. So,
and I've had some conversation with Ms. Cindy Pierre, EFS director, about finding homes for these displaced families, but we will have another conversation with her in terms of being able to pretty much take over this case management, and if they don't have the capacity, we'll talk about the option.
Very firm commitment. Mm-hmm. Right? How many resources can they handle it? What's going to look like? We'll leave it great. Make it really clear. All right, any other questions?
Did you and I, shortly after this, talked about stress management for the first responders that were involved?
We have one CIS debriefing with Highway Patrol. I think it went fine. I couldn't make it. We were in the heat of everything when they wanted to do it. It was the Friday after the storm. I did get to talk to some of my leadership that works under me, and they said it went really well. It went good for our employees. We still have some emotional attachment with some that were helped, and I told my staff that if they wanted to do something in that area, that, you know, we'd find a way to do it. If it was to go down there just to meet and greet. When we get everybody set up, find out where everybody's going in a fashion to go, because, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, it was the time to be asking everybody's life history and how you're doing. And the Santa Claus thing went really well, helped with that a lot. We, our crowd got to help with some of the children and hand out toys and meet them and talk to them. So I do see that there's some stress on our crowd that still needs to be addressed, but it is, that really helped with Highway Patrol coming in and taking the time and sitting down and starting to talk to them.
You look tired. You need to take care of yourself, too.
If I can get his camera set up, I'm gonna be happy. But I, you know, my boots hit the ground that Monday morning. They asked me when we were searching, said, when are you gonna shut this down? I said, we're not finishing until those two children are found. You identify where those two children are. So we're gonna work. We're not stopping. And they identified where those two children were. And we had a second conversation now. Until we find these people, at least something temporary to live in, we can't hold back.
And I think it's well taken. Probably starting to get to a place of this thing where it's getting out of real special. You need to be thinking about the next event.
And we got three more opportunities in the Atlantic right now.
Yeah, we can do what we can.
So I think one other case, and Tracy, or I can give you the name of this person, I think this is one of the people who did not have a location yet. The Craigs had another mobile home park further up, and this person was able to purchase a lot. So she's purchased a lot, but Tracy had to work it out to give this person a right-of-way to that property, and they worked it out with the Craigs. So that deal is going to be signed this week with them to purchase, and then they're going to have, they're buying a mobile home. That's going to go into that lot of new double time. So we want more bandwidth.
Yeah, and that's what we like to hear. We actually made a list. We sat down and called everybody we knew that had rental properties, and we made a list. So if you got a phone call, we won't expect it. We advertised for you. But we made a list. We didn't make it singling out any one person. But, you know, one of the challenges is, I'll tell you this, I think I've met Mr. Craig one time before this storm. He's a very honest and outspoken man. I really respect him for some of the things he's told me, because he ain't a man that lies. He tells it like it is. But I've seen and heard about what he's done for the people inside of Andrews Park. And when you're helping families at least be able to get on their feet, it's a different price when you get out here and start looking at different structures and how much it costs to live, because I think a lot of what he was doing in there was out of goodness of his heart.
Yeah, he lost an awful lot, but those were his homes primarily. They're totally gone.
But I mean, they financially, there was opportunities there that people could afford.
And no insurance care.
And,
on his,
you know, when you come out, you know, paying that kind of rent, and then you come out here and look at other places, and you're about double. Families may not have the opportunity to jump on it, you know, as fast as some other ones, and that's why if we can get them back to where they were, it'll lessen the burden on them to, because there are some good people out there. I'm just trying to get ahead. I'm trying to get my feet under me. I'm trying to take care of my family. And it, you know, you look at them, they're not telling you a story. They were there to he was helping them out. So
a lot of people wanted to go back, but yet still there were some who said they probably left. But they're not going to go back. So good look at it.
Well, thank you, Mr. The eight families who are there so far are extremely grateful.
Yeah,
well, to be there, and they're so grateful that we were able to provide that temporary housing for them.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, and I promise you I won't set up to say this, but I do want to congratulate Mitch and his guys and gals, because last week when Barry and I were standing out, you know, trying to monitor the debris, and it as y'all all know, it was hot. God knows it was hot last week. And I saw those gals and guys when they were coming out of those homes and, you know, the manager coming out, checking on us from time to time. And they were soaked. I mean, they're in a house, a mobile home that has new air conditioning working at the time while they're in there working to make sure everybody's going to have somewhere to stay. So I congratulate you and your crowd because they did an extremely, extremely good job. And I tell you, I felt sorry for them. I really felt sorry for them.
We got some amazing employees.
You have. I'll give them credit. I knew everybody else has worked hard, and I'm not patting any one particular group on the back, but they had a mission, and they accomplished their mission.
We'll be talking about employee appreciation a little later on.
Keep that in mind, everybody.
thank you, bro.
Okay. Next on our reports and appointments is our fire study review from EnviroSafe. EnviroSafe, are you on the phone?
We are. Thank you so very much for allowing us to join you. My name is Greg Grayson, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you here tonight. I also have a couple of our other team members with us. Chief Barnell from Rocky Mount is on with us, and also Robert McNally, who is our GIS specialist. So we certainly appreciate the honor to be with you, and we're going to go through a presentation with you here tonight, but let me say up front how much we appreciate Mitch and your fire service people in Berkey County. They have been a pleasure to work with through this process. We've worked through this pandemic to do this study, but you know what, y'all have seen them work, and as you were noting a moment ago, the great work that they have done here over this most recent disaster and the care and dedication they've demonstrated. And you were very blessed to have a dedicated staff and fire service, if I may say so, throughout Berkey County. So we appreciate that opportunity today, and thank you for allowing us to be here. We will go through this presentation. We were asked to share with you some of the information from the fire study that we've been working on, and we were fortunate to be able to start this work back before the pandemic and begin making those efforts, and have really, you know, been able to continue moving it forward. Mitch has been excellent to work with. We have worked with him closely throughout this whole process. Again, his level of professionalism and dedication are to be commended. Mr. Ray, your tax administrator, assisted us as well. Two of your fire chiefs have been involved in all the components of this. Chief Sari from Maryhill Midway and Chief Kilpatrick from Windsor. Both of those gentlemen have been very involved, engaged, and been wonderful troubleshooters throughout this entire process. David Humphrey from Kelford and also Donald Northcott from Coleraine were also very helpful and contributed in components of this process. So thank you for that opportunity. We want to sincerely thank them for assisting throughout this. You've had a very dedicated team of people, and it has been our pleasure to assist. So North Carolina Fire Chief Consulting, we are North Carolina's fire service provider. We work Murphy DeManio in North Carolina. We focus on North Carolina. And we really try to work with cities, counties, all municipalities. We're the League of Municipalities fire consulting provider. So that what that means is anything that a city or county needs, we do directly, or we have an arrangement or agreement with someone else to assist us. So we work throughout state in all areas fire. Our team is made up primarily of retired fire chiefs from North Carolina. And we try to just build, support, and improve service delivery systems throughout our state. Here's just a few of the jurisdictions that we have worked with recently, and we span pretty much every size of community across North Carolina, and this is our home, and we work diligently to try to improve services. Everything we do with this study for Berkey County and all the work we do is all about continuous improvement. We are looking at what you're doing today, what could be done, how do you take that and then move it forward, reevaluate, reanalyze, improve. This is an ongoing process. And so we very much focus on that with everything that we do with Fire Chief Consulting. we were asked to give a overall goal to demonstrate for Bertie County what realistic changes are needed to the system in Bertie County to sustain and improve the services in the years to come. You've had a chance to see your fire service in action recently, but they're in action every day and serving Bertie County. There's a lot of changes happening in the fire service across North Carolina. I started as a volunteer myself back in 82. Things have changed very differently. I still volunteer today. Things are very different in the volunteer fire service world than they ever have been. And so we have been asked to take a look at where you are and try to make the best projections we can and try to compare with some best practices throughout North Carolina. We were asked to look at what the funding options that are available to Bertie County to address the needs in the years to come. What does the state allow? What are the options? What are the pros? What are the cons? That type thing to each option. We were asked to look at the modifications to the service delivery system to sustain the levels. You've got a very strong system today. How do we sustain that? And what's going to be needed to sustain that? And then what changes are needed within your contract to align them to best industry practices in North Carolina? Another item that we were asked to take a look at. One of the first things that we did with this was to hear from your fire chiefs. And we were able to meet with them in Bertie County before all this pandemic came up. And we did an analysis with them. We asked them what was the greatest strengths? What are the greatest strengths of the system in Bertie County? Where are the gaps at? What do you see as the gaps? Where are opportunities for improvement? And then if nothing changes, what do you see as the threats? And so we had a great session with them. They were very involved, engaged. They offered a lot of really good feedback. We did go a little bit further as well and offered a survey to your firefighters. Your chiefs gave great feedback, but we didn't want anyone excluded. We wanted to reach out to your firefighters as well. And we offered them an electronic survey if they could give some feedback. And one of the things we found is their feedback was very much in alignment with the chief's feedback. Okay. So your fire chief saw some strengths in Bertie County, and they identified those strengths as the experience of the firefighters. And also the automatic aid system. You do have a good automatic aid system where what that means is one fire department comes and helps another one on a structure fire or when they're on another call. Not every county has that kind of relationship. And of our 100 counties in North Carolina, everyone doesn't have the kind of relationship that you do. And that certainly is a strength. They noted your EMS system and the strong EMS system you have in Bertie County. How people work together in Bertie County. Again, not every county gets to experience that. There was recognition about the support that Martin Community College gives the fire service in Bertie County. We're going to talk about that a little bit later because that's one of the areas of concern as well. But one of the strengths was how they support some of your departments. Your chiefs in the county also recognize that there's some really good regional services, forestry, helicopter. You have a hazardous materials regional response team down in Williamston, and they recognize that that's some great benefits to Bertie County. And the last item is very true, the level of service that's being provided with very low funds throughout the county, because you are blessed today to have a strong volunteer system, and the level of service that's being provided is really, really good. Your chief saw some gaps, and we had a great discussion with them about this. And one of the chiefs, I think, said it best, you know, when we look behind us and we don't see nobody coming behind us. When we're gone, what's going to happen? And, you know, this is not a problem that's unique to Bertie County. Let me be very clear about that. This is a problem in all 100 counties. We've been working with an urban county near Charlotte, and they have the very same challenges of recruiting and finding new people that want to be volunteers. But one of your chiefs, I think, really said it well. We look behind us and we don't see other people coming, and that really concerns us. They talked about the need for incentives for younger firefighters. Many people find it challenging to find the time for the commitment and the training and being away from family. And so few businesses anymore allow firefighters respond to calls and those type things that they recognize the need for being able to support younger firefighters. some of the concerns also and gaps were we don't have the money to accept grants. There's grants we could apply for, but many of these grants, one of the most common is called an AFG grant, American Fire Grant Program. It does require a match. And they said, sometimes we don't even put in for grants because we don't have the money to match our portion that we have to pay. And they felt like that was an important concern that they wanted to bring out in this work. The need to help you as elected officials and in departments that serve municipalities to help their municipal elected officials know more about what they do and the services that they provide. You've had a chance to see some of that in a disaster mode here in recent days, but they're responding 724-365 and wanted to help you to know more about what they do. And I hope that we have helped to paint that some of that picture through this work that we've been working on for the last few months. They recognize the need to invest more in incident command systems and more in training. And they see the need for some more assistance from law enforcement, where, for example, a motor vehicle accident, how long volunteers are waiting until they're able to release the scene back to law enforcement. And the longer volunteers are out there, the fewer volunteers want to come. And so they talked about some of the need for that. The firefighters are available on any given weekday. And what that means is that you've got good turnout many times in nights and weekends, but you're beginning to see some challenges Monday through Friday, weekdays, when people are at work. The chiefs expressed the need to try to catch up to other areas of the state in service levels, and also the need to have one community college. You have two community colleges serving Bertie County, and that creates some challenges. We're going to come with a recommendation back to you on that, but having been a fire chief for many years, training is a tool and such an important piece to pull people together. In the same department, it pulls people together, but training is also so critical in pulling multiple departments together or the whole county together in your fire service. So we see that as a way to strengthen, but the chiefs recognized that need and noted it. They noted some changes and enhancements they feel like would help with emergency communications. Most of those were around helping your 911 staff better understand fire operations. They primarily work in a law enforcement environment, as do many counties. And they felt like some communication there would be helpful, and better understanding would be helpful. And then having some water lines with low flow capability. And that's not unusual in North Carolina either. I grew up in a rural county. And, many lines were put in with USDA funds, things like that, that they maybe don't have the flow that is needed sometimes for fire protection. And your chiefs recognize that as well. They saw opportunities. They see that there are grant opportunities that are available. But again, a concern is we don't always go after them because we don't have the funds to match that. They saw an opportunity of having a single community college do the fire training in Bertie County, which we spoke about earlier. And they also saw an opportunity of a fire training center. Most of the counties in North Carolina that have fire training centers do those through the community college system, because there's a funding mechanism that the college system has through FTEs or full-time equivalencies to get reimbursed for training. They also recognize the opportunity of being outside training and support and trying to reimburse some of the expenses to go to other places and travel to other parts of North Carolina to learn and get additional education. Some of the threats, if nothing changes with your system that the fire chiefs identified, is without changes, the fire service in Bertie County, as you know it today, won't look the same in 10 years. The chiefs made the comment, it won't be what we know it is today in 10 years. This is that comment of we look behind us and we don't see people coming up behind us. Another threat is being able to adapt to the different type of calls and special risk and hazards. As you do have growth and you have new industry or places of operation that present new hazards and being ready to address those. And then one of the big pieces of threats is looking at the call volume increasing and the reducing number of firefighters and the concern from the fire chiefs primarily that they expressed to us is weekdays And again, that is not unique to Bertie County as well. We did reach out to firefighters because that's such an important group and didn't want anybody to feel left out. So we did get 26 responses back. Of the people that responded, 77% of them said that they were satisfied or very satisfied with the current level of services in Bertie County. And I think that really reflects pride. They're proud of what they do. They're proud of the difference that they make, the positive difference they make in Bertie County, and recognize, you know, 77%, we do a very good job. We're very pleased with the service level we provide. Some of the feedback was the dedication, the teamwork, the response times, the dependability, that pride factor again, and the family network. The firefighters recognize the communications opportunities, 911 communication opportunities needs, and the communication system needs. The training was recognized by the firefighters. The funding, we felt like they were underfunded, and then securing younger firefighters. So the gist of this is your fire chiefs had a lot of wonderful feedback and data, and your firefighters validated what they were saying were needs and priorities. The majority of this project really was around the geographical information system, and we were asked to do a significant amount of analysis. Robert McNally is here with us today on the line, and he led this effort. These are all the different things that we were asked to look at in the computer system and geographic information system, and all this data and maps will come back to you as the county to use as you move forward and staff to use to move forward. But it was a significant amount of data. We work with a lot of counties in North Carolina, and you have been, you know, you're to be commended for looking at this and using these tools to plan and look at where your system is and how do we best move forward. And this is the best stuff that's out there. And so we commend you for being willing to look at this and invest in this opportunity and importance of this fire protection delivery system. On your GIS analysis, a review indicated that about two-thirds of the incidents that are occurring are in an 8-minute travel time of a fire station. And when you ask, well, why is that so important? Well, fire will move from the room of origin outside of that in 8 minutes or less. So if you're really going to be able to have an impact, that becomes important. Any type of life-threatening medical emergency that occurs, 8 minutes is very important. And as Mr. Cooper will tell you as well, that's that opportunity to really make a difference. And so about two-thirds of your responses are within that 8-minute area. And as a county, you've got a lot of undeveloped area throughout there as well. So the point that being is you've got a good delivery system overall today. Most of your calls, we looked at where are these calls occurring? Where's the calls for service? Where are the needs? And that really follows your arteries. Obviously, there's a higher density in Windsor, Lewiston, Kelford, Allander, Powellsville, Maryhill. But your arteries and roadways are wherever the people are is where the incidents are. And so we did look at where are those incidents occurring at. The travel time for assembling an effective firefighting force was a little over 9 minutes, And establishing an effective firefighting force basically means I've got enough firefighters to make entry into this structure and to work in controlling the fire in the structure. It takes a lot of folks, takes a lot of hands. It's a labor-intensive process, and you're able to do that in about nine minutes on the travel time piece. Now, there's parts of the, when you look at the overall response, somebody calls 911. Ms. Smith, we would say, calls 911. That has to be processed and dispatched to your firefighters. They have to travel to the incident. Then they have to be able to set up and control the incident. So we did look very closely at your travel time. The average age of your firefighters in Bertie County is 46. And we looked at your district boundaries, and you're really in good shape there. We don't always see this nice of an alignment and being at, are you sending the closest station to where your need is? And for the most part, you are. there's very, very few changes that we're recommending in your boundaries of your districts. The computer system analyzes all that and says, you know, what's the closest response? And overall, your system is good there, okay? We were also asked to look at a peer review. We typically try to do this where we pull everybody together at one time. That didn't work in the pandemic, so we broke it up. How do you deal with a big problem? You break it up into pieces. It actually, I think, it, in the end, gives you more information and a better product. It's a lot more time, a lot more work to do this, but we wanted to give a good product back to you. And what we were able to do is break this up into different components and look at each of those components. And we brought in people from other areas to help us well in each of those areas. And we tried to give some best practice research and examples, and we'll touch base on each of the areas that we talked about. First, we looked at operations, and there were a few districts that the system said did need some realignment, but again, not very many. Overall, your districts are in pretty good shape. There is some overlap with Roxabelle and Kelford, so we looked at that. That's the only area you have any significant overlap. And our recommendation associated with that is that the people in that area look at that model, look at the coverage you have with the data we've given you, and see what other options you think might be more feasible. There is overlap in that particular area, but we want to be very clear that just because there's overlap in those districts and not in other areas of the county, does not mean that in any way we're advocating closing fire stations. We'll be very, very clear about that. We're just saying the districts have more overlap than any other piece of the county, and those need some attention. We've given some examples of some ways to help address that, but that's the only area that you had any significant overlap. Again, I want to be clear that that doesn't mean closing stations. That just means that we think that model could be revisited and look a little bit different. We talked about the need to have a unified fire ground operating procedure in the county. We had the blessing of having quite a few folks help us with this. The previous chief from Williamston, as well as the current chief from Williamston, was part of that discussion. Larry Johnson with Martin Community College, and as well as others, were part of some of those discussions. And that because you do have a good automatic aid system, we feel like having a countywide fireground standard would be really beneficial to you. Currently, you're sending two departments on structure fire calls, and that's throughout the county. And that's generally a good model for the single one and two family structures. But as your volunteer numbers diminish, we recommend coming in and adding an increased response to areas that your chiefs identify as high-risk locations. Those might be some heavy commercial properties. They might be locations that they have determined are high risk. We've gathered some of those from throughout the county and looked at where those are. We feel like that some of those need attention and having a third department respond to it, simply to try to put enough firefighters there for them to safely operate. And that's a great next step. So you're really already heading in the right direction. You're already sending two to all locations, but those that the chiefs identify as high risk, we encourage you to consider adding a third department respond. We had a lot of discussion and work around the training piece of this, and we recognize that this presents some challenges and barriers with training because the system is regulated through the state. But the departments that voiced to us said that they were really pleased with the service from Martin Community College. And we certainly would say that having a unified training system throughout the county would have a lot of benefits. And we're including that as a recommendation as well. That may take a prompt from you as elected officials to say, we would like to explore this and see how we could improve the training program in Bertie County by having a single provider for the fire piece of the community college delivery. Some additional training in the 911 telecommunicator process is also recommended, and we've got an example of that. In fact, Martin Community College has a training program that helps provide some of those features as well. And then as resources become available, some response to the highest and most critical life-threatening medical emergencies is something you could look at long-term. Many areas of the state are moving to that simply because of that critical window of time of reaching someone when they're having a cardiac arrest or when they're having profuse bleeding or something that is most critical. We looked at recruitment and retention, and please let me comfort you in saying that that is not a Bertie County issue. That's in all 100 counties, and it's across the country. That is not unique to Bertie County. In fact, I would say your volunteerism in many ways is stronger than other counties are experiencing. So please know that the recruitment and retention piece is really huge. We brought in Tracy Mosley. He works with the North Carolina Association of Fire Chiefs. They received a grant, and he's working with departments all across North Carolina. We brought him in to help with that. He is a retired chief from down in Wilson, as well as we brought someone in from the International Association of Fire Chiefs, who is working on methods from across the country. What's working? What could work? What would work here in Bertie County? And that trend across the country is somewhat of a shift from volunteers into more part-time, especially weekdays, and then in some places more career as for more urban areas. But to try to project forward, we would say that your weekday response would be the first place that may need attention. And most counties try to start dealing with that with some part-time personnel. But unfortunately, with that comes expense. So we outlined 11 short-term recommendations, and those involve training, outreach, looking for volunteers in non-traditional roles, and family involvement as well. We looked at 4 longer-term recommendations, such as getting a grant. There's a grant program. It's called SAFER. That could help fund like a part-time person for the county to help with recruitment that could work with all the fire departments in the county, and recommend looking at that the next time that that SAFER grant is available. Recognition programs are valuable, and also we've offered some live-in programs that many people in North Carolina are finding, or many departments in North Carolina are finding, is helpful. One of the other primary things that's working in North Carolina is high school programs and trying to catch youth when they're young and show them that the fire service can be a great career. And then if they're looking to volunteer, they might spawn an interest that would help. And so that's another great model that we have in other areas, and we offered some examples and information about things you might consider longer term for Bertie County. We were asked specifically to look at tax districts and funding, and what will the statutes in North Carolina allow you to do? What are your options? And, one of the pieces is trying to get the closest station responding to anything within the county, and you're in pretty good shape there. Right behind that is trying to provide the best insurance rating that you can within those areas. Many counties are striving to improve that. The insurance rating system kind of works backwards. The lowest level of protection is recognized as a class 10, and then that basic level protection 9, 8, 7, and it goes all the way down to class 1, which is considered the highest or best level. And so it's kind of an inverse system. But the difference that it makes is for your property owners, homeowners, paying their insurance premiums, that rating is proportional to the amount of insurance that they pay. The greatest savings come in that class 9 to 8, 8 to 7, 7 to 6 for most homeowners. And so that's many counties are really striving to try to impact that as best they can, looking at any of the departments that are class 9. And so we encourage you to continue to do what you're doing there. And keep that as an area of focus. When you look at the funding structures, there's different ways that you can fund fire protection in North Carolina. Probably the majority of counties overall are using rural fire tax districts, mainly because they were voted in by the people back in the 50s and 60s. The volunteer department I grew up in, they voted that rural tax district in many years ago, and many counties are still using them. But I would say that those counties that are using rural tax districts are, many are moving away from those. A couple reasons. One, they are difficult to modify and change. They do require, there's a judicial process to create and change those districts over time. Many of those are capped at a particular cents per $100. And frankly, in many counties in North Carolina, that's not creating enough funding to support fire service anymore. It did back before when everything was volunteer, but as that's changing, it's not adequate to support the fire services in 2020, unfortunately. So there are quite a few counties that are using rural fire tax districts. There are many counties that are moving to service districts. So either counties are creating a service district from the beginning. If they're using the older rural fire tax districts, they're moving to service districts. State law will allow you to create a service district just like it will a sanitation or a water or other types of service districts. One purpose can be for fire protection, and many counties are implementing service districts. So people hear that and they think, well, you can do the entire unincorporated area of the county in one service district if you chose to, but many counties also will do regional service districts. So they might say the northern counties are a region, and or the northern part of the county is a region and another part of the county is another region. You know, so there can be regional districts or it can be countywide. And service districts can include municipalities as well. The municipality can say, by resolution, can say we want to be a part of a service district, and they're allowed to do so. So that becomes pretty advantageous as well, because remember what I said, where are your calls occurring? Your calls are occurring where your people are, obviously. So corridors, municipality areas, where there's greater density, as well as those transportation corridors. And so the municipalities can be a part of that service district. The third model of funding that North Carolina uses is general fund appropriation, and you are using that today. I would say that you're one of the very few counties that are still using a general fund appropriation. Many counties will appropriate money, but they're supplementing other models. So, you know, they might appropriate a general fund, but they're supplementing service districts or rural districts. So you are one of the few that are doing that. You're currently providing $30,000 per department to 12 contracting fire departments. And if my information from Mr. Ray is correct, that'll equate out to about 3.5 cents of the ad valorem. So you are currently funding your fire service through general fund appropriation. But we wanted to bring to your attention that there are other models there that we have looked at, and we've offered the pros and cons of each of those models to you as well. In offering those pros and cons and looking at your numbers of responses and times and trying to do the best we can do with forecasting what the future might look like based on the experience of other North Carolina counties, longer term, we would recommend that you look at a service district model, whether that be a countywide service district model or a regional model. You know, those are questions you'd have to answer. Some of that would depend upon who is in, who is out, how would that look like, what is the best fit in the county. And we're not able to do that until you have that level of discussion with your fire service and your other municipal officials. But, you know, looking at making some of the modifications to your contract certainly would come along with that. But we could say to you that in the position you're in today, what is the model that would give you the most sustainability, the most flexibility for your delivery system of the tools that are available to us today in North Carolina? The service district model would be your best choice to try to support your funding differently within Bertie County. We do recommend that a team be established with your fire service leaders and commissioners. It's important that you have engagement in that to be able to steer that in the direction that works best for your constituents, but also reaching out to those municipalities that may or may not want to be a part of that service district. One model that many counties use is a fire commission to help with that, where there are fire service representatives, county commissioner representatives, and maybe municipal representatives, and maybe some citizen representatives as well. That's a very typical approach that's used throughout North Carolina with these service districts. Sometimes firefighters may hear this service district model and they get the idea that what you're trying to take something away is simply a funding mechanism. Only one county out of our 100 counties in North Carolina, only one county functions as a county fire department. That's New Hanover County. The other 99 counties do what you do, and you contract with private nonprofit corporations. And so many counties that use service district models continue to contract with private nonprofit corporations. You just use a tool that the legislature has provided to help fund and support those operations, especially as our community grows and unfortunately as our volunteers diminish. So the next steps moving forward would be to determine if you do want to move towards some type of service district model and move away from that general fund model. And we would recommend if you did so, then reach out to the municipalities and consider what a fire commission might look like for Bertie County to make some recommendations back to you as decision makers in setting tax rates and service levels for Bertie County. Also, we recommend to make some response districts to ensure the closest station response wherever possible. Again, most of your areas are in pretty good shape with that, but those changes could be made. Those would require commissioner involvement to do that. And the last item we'd say is supporting your fire chiefs. You have a really deep level of dedication in Bertie County. We got to see that firsthand and hear how people care and want to do a good job. And then we've been following you ever since this latest disaster and all the things your folks have been going through. We know they care. We know that they're wanting to do a good job. And we encourage you to support them and look at ways that you can help to improve the service levels and look at the contract when they have funding. As an example, one of the big concerns, we would like to go after grants, but we don't have matching grant money. So what are ways to do that? And, you know, that service district model may be a way that would enable them to do that, obviously with your direction and blessing. So those are the next steps that we would recommend. Again, everything is focused on continuous improvement. What are we doing today? How can we make this better? How can we improve? How can we make the system stronger tomorrow than it is today? With that, me and my staff will certainly be glad to take any questions that you might have or be glad to assist you in any way possible. We did review this presentation with your fire chiefs recently and made them aware of our recommendations, and a number of your chiefs have been involved in all the components, and we really appreciate that as well. So certainly be glad to take any questions that you might have.
First of all, Greg, let me say thank you for a very comprehensive study. Enlightening. I don't think a lot of it might have been new to us, and this is leads to my at least first question. You know, a few years ago, I think it was probably maybe about 3 years ago, we were looking at, do we raise the level of general fund appropriations to each of the fire departments? And the committee brought in the USDA with the study that said, gee, you know, you guys, that's $360,000. You could double that money through a grant, that part being matched for, so 360 never comes 720. But the problem is that then, how do you determine how that money is split up and where does it go within the different organizations? So, you know, and that's kind of part of an answer to, how you do that matching piece, if you use the money that we do have, but then how do you determine where those funds go? Some people, departments want different things, right? And if you go through a grant process, sometimes there's limitations or specifics on equipment only, or so much on training, so much on et cetera, matching that up to an individual department. How does that work?
Right. Well, so the primary funding mechanism, federal money, comes through the AFG grant. And every year that program changes. I do the grants for my volunteer department today. Every year the priorities change somewhat. But you make that grant proposal, but it does require that you have a match. It might be a 5%, it might be a 10% match, depends on the grant program and what you're trying to match. It doesn't work for what they call brick and mortar. It doesn't work for buildings, not the primary grant funding program. Most is for equipment. It might cover air packs. It might cover gear. It might cover some pieces of apparatus or that type thing. So, but it does, those do require matches, and fire service equipment is very expensive. So, you know, those matches, what we heard from your chiefs is that we don't apply for some of these simply because there's no way we can make the match. So what counties have done in some places to help with that may be youth service districts and they you know, have that type of situation where they collect those funds and the county can make a grant to help cover the grant match as an example. So if there was a 10% grant match and the department didn't have the money, could they get that money? Could they leverage that match in order to achieve what they're trying to do? And that happens in some counties as well. So, you know, you're exactly right. There, any grant opportunities are, if you don't apply, you know, you're not going to get them. And so, you know, that goes year to year, federal funding, you never know quite what's going to be there, but it's the most significant grant opportunity. There are obviously other grants and smaller grants, but it's called the AFG program. That's the primary grant that most departments in North Carolina get funding from.
Mr. Gregg, this is Tammy Lee. Can you tell us what the average, what kind of tax rate should we, service tax, should we be looking at for Berkeley County? I mean, is it 2%, 3%, 5%?
Well, based upon what you're putting into the system now, and I certainly would defer to your tax administrator, Mr. Ray, on this, but based upon the numbers he's provided us, you're somewhere about 3.5 cents today. If you look at what is that current general fund allocation working out to be? We can just say to you that we've studied, you know, the counties across North Carolina. The average rate, mean average rate for fire districts in North Carolina is about 10 cents. So you obviously don't flip a switch and get there. That takes time. But you're somewhere in approximately 3.5 cents based upon the information we have. We can say that a mean average fire tax rate in North Carolina is about 10. What would it take? You obviously have to decide that. We can say to you, though, that the costs of providing fire service, both in equipment and the largest piece of that is personnel, those are going to increase moving forward. So you'll be faced with the challenge of what do we do next? Do we try to increase this general fund supplement? Do we try to use other tools that are available to us? And that's where we come to you and say, consider a service district to help you have another tool in your toolbox.
When you're looking, Greg, at most of those service districts that you've seen other examples of, how do municipalities play in that funding process as well? Do many of them join that process? And we have small municipalities, obviously, you know, they may invest a little, and Windsor does a lot into theirs, a major town. And some of the others have to raise their money through all kinds of ways, selling dinners and everything else. So, but what's the model when you municipalities put their skin in the game?
Well, most of the counties that would be similar to Berkeley County, the municipality, the smaller municipalities anyway, choose to be a part of the service district. They have to do that. It's their choice, meaning they can choose to fund their fire protection themselves or be part of the service district. What we see is most smaller municipalities choose to be a part of the service district, and therefore, you know, it all the funds come into one place. The trade-off with that, if you will, is that typically when that happens, that municipality has some representation to you as the County Board of Commissioners. That might be through that fire commission. It might be an advisory board, that they have a voice. If they join that, we typically see that they have a voice. Let me contrast it to the largest county. Let me go to the largest county in state. Wake County has a unified service district system, but the town of Wendell chooses to be a part of that. Okay, so the county's service district applies to the unincorporated areas, but it applies within the town of Wendell as well. So the town of Wendell has a person on the county fire commission to help give a voice for Wendell. So that's just one example. Rural county I grew up in, most all the smaller municipalities are part of that service district. And then they have an advisory board to the Board of Commissioners who sets the tax rate for that service district.
Okay, so how does their financial contribution to that fund of municipalities generally work?
The service district is one rate. Now you can set up, you could set up multiple service districts. There's nothing in the statutes that prevents you from having multiple service districts. Typically we see those as like regional, a section of the county that works together, functions together, might come together and have a regional service district. Kind of the whole purpose of service district though is to get a larger area. When we talk about your response today, you're responding to two departments to a residential structure fire. But particularly in those areas where there's commercial property, we're looking at the number of people you're sending and saying you really need to be sending a third department to that. Well, when you're sending firefighters and you're sending those resources, it takes funds to do that. So, we see that the same rate within a service district applies to everyone within that service district. So, just illustratively, if you were to set a 5 cent service district rate, it would apply to everyone within that service district, whether they were in a municipality or they were in an unincorporated area.
Some of this tax cost to the citizens would probably be offset by some insurance savings. Can you touch on that?
Yes, sir. That's what we see across the state. And so, some counties have set in their contract that they want every department at class 5 or lower. Well, that's great because that really helps people with their insurance premiums. But there's a cost to do that, obviously, and they're using service district to help lower the insurance rate so that they at the end of the day, the citizen pays more. We've put some information in your report that shows some illustrative examples of that. There's really significant savings though in that class for a homeowner, class 9 to 8, 8 to 7. Each step of that journey is significant saving. I've been in the fire service quite a while and dealt a lot with ISO. I've yet to meet the person that had rather pay their insurance company than pay their fire department. I hadn't met that person yet. There might be somebody out there, but I hadn't met them. So, people typically, it's an investment that does save you more money than it costs. And so that's why, many have been trying to really lower those insurance ratings. And your folks are working hard on that today. There are just probably opportunities that some funding would help move that forward.
Greg, in your conversations with the chief, were there any concerns about if we did a fire district, one fire department getting that doesn't answer but 5 or 6 calls a month, getting the same amount as they are now to a fire department that answers 40 calls in a month?
Sure, that's a great question. And let me say that what most counties try to do with that, and we put some of that in the report as well, what most counties do is come up that do a service district. They look at a number of different pieces, kind of a formula, if you will, to figure that out. They look at, okay, what are the what's the property tax value in this area? What does 1 cent generate, if you will, within this area that they're primarily responsible for? So they'll look at what's the value of the property. They'll look at the call volume that's within that area as well. They may look at the municipality, if the municipality helps fund some pieces of that. They're using different variables come up with a funding mechanism. So, what we've seen in other counties is that doesn't become a big issue if you distribute your district so that the closest station responds, You correct your district so that you don't have overlap, and you've got the correct distribution. Then you can run it through a formula, look at what's the property, what kind of property are they protecting? How many people are they protecting? What's the call volume they're protecting? And then factor that in, and, you know, it kind of disputes that issue about this person gets more than us or whatever, because it's figured out on numbers data.
When you talk about the closest station responding, are you looking at that just geographically, or are you taking into consideration average response times for the departments?
Yeah, I'll ask Robert McNally is on the line with us. He did our GIS analysis, and see if he can maybe unmute and speak to this. But we really try to look at the road distances. And what's the road distance? And the one reason for that is the ISO, Insurance Services Office, that does the ratings, they look at road distances. So in our calculation, we try to look at that as well. Robert, would you like to speak to that question as well, sir?
Yeah, thanks, Chief. It's based upon travel time. We use the road network. We use the actual speed limits of the streets, and we run the computer as if there were engines and staffed engines exiting the stations at the same time and kind of racing toward each other on streets. And where they meet is where the closest station response border ought to be, according to the model.
So if you had a department who was struggling getting people to the station, that's something that's not factored into what you did.
That's correct. Those variables are hard to, they're not impossible to factor in, but in this case, we did not factor in that turnout time, is what we call it. That time between when they are dispatched and when they are ready to roll the engine.
We did look at the rosters of the department, and we looked at placing, Robert placed all those as far as their home addresses. Now, you know, your firefighters may not be responding from their home. They could be somewhere else, but that the best way we could map that is looking, okay, where are your firefighters located, and then being able to model that. Do you want to speak to that for a moment as well, Robert?
Yeah, and in that sense, we use the same thing. We use the street network and the actual speed limits on the streets, and we ran them toward their host fire department. And in the report, there's a chart there that indicates the average amount of time it takes to get a staff to the firehouse.
But you're speaking theoretically, not on what the actual response time history has been. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said you're speaking theoretically, what it theoretically takes based on geographical things and not what the history of the response time of that department is. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's modeling. It's not using the exact data, no.
Thank you.
Greg, you talked about high school programs, and we have one here in the county that's been very successful, our law enforcement cadet program, which is high school kids, and it looks at every, you know, law enforcement, but it does not address, am I right, Mitch, fire safety in that. Are there any programs that combine programs that include fire in that law enforcement kind of thing, training?
I'm not aware of any combining them. Most have a fire track program that we see that have worked well. And so, you know, it's an involvement from the high school, but the people can go through, the youth can go through that and actually leave that program with a certification. They give them enough training to be able to leave with a certification. I'm not aware of a hybrid piece, but there may be a school that does both. And there might be some, you know, opportunities to collaborate, but there is a curriculum that they follow, and it is standardized throughout North Carolina.
How old do you have to be a volunteer firefighter?
Well, it depends on the department, really. But as you look at throughout North Carolina, 18 is going to be recognized. Now, there are junior programs, apprentice-type programs, and things like that, but 18 is going to be generally recognized.
And for our listening audience, Commissioner Causey, the insurance commissioner, he did a new program where you could get your lifetime hunt license, like hack rights or something, as an incentive to be a volunteer fireman. So, my husband took advantage of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there are other efforts being made at the state level to continue to add to that. And I think it emphasizes that the need for volunteers and the change in volunteers is a statewide issue.
And, Greg, I know you mentioned that a lot of the chiefs spoke well of Martin community. I think that has something to do with their track record, but they've also made a significant major investment in upfitting their training facility there in Williamston. New classrooms, new outside facilities, the whole works. They put a lot of money into that program.
Right. We try to say to you that your training is very important. Your departments gave us feedback that they're really liking what Martin is doing. We would say to you, having everybody in the same program would give you operational benefits. Whatever program it is would give you operational benefits. But your chiefs who work with Martin certainly spoke very high of their investment in fire training.
Greg, I know you guys do this study, and we knew that you did a good job at this. But do you also, beyond the study, consult with counties who are looking to make some decisions, or once they made a decision to move in a certain direction, to consult with them in terms of implementation, that kind of thing?
Yeah, certainly. What we would try to do is connect you with people who have been through the very same thing, and be able to help step you through that. Some of the statutes are detailed. There's, for example, if you do a service district, you have to have a report prepared a specific way that addresses these specific things, and you've got to kind of cross your T's and dot your I's, you know. So we help sometimes in putting those together for people, but the biggest piece of that is helping connect you with other counties that have been through a similar journey recently, and then help brainstorm suggestions and ideas or what I'll just call again best practices that you might want to consider. At the end of the day, you make those decisions, so you want to be as informed as possible. And our role as consultants is try to make you well-informed, to make well-informed decisions.
Yeah, but thank you, I understand that. But do you also work with counties on, quote, once they've made a decision, the actual implementation process within, down the I's and crossing the T's within a county? Is that something you've done too?
Yes. Yeah, so as an example, I use Cumberland County as an example with that. We needed to get a group together as a facilitation of this too. So we want to get people working together and talking and coming to common goals and agreement. And we help with that. We worked with Cumberland County for 3 years before they finally, implemented, 2 years before they finally implemented a service district, as an example. It took a lot of work to get there. And so we've done that for some counties as well. And it is facilitation of that and just trying to help county staff and the fire service together to make things move forward.
Okay, great. Anything else, folks? Lloyd?
Yes,
Greg, thank you. Thank you so very much. We really appreciate it. This is great information for us. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. And once again, I want to give appreciation to your staff and your fire service being so cooperative with us during this pandemic. It's been a new time for all of us, and they have been excellent to work with. We appreciate your public service, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to work together with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Much appreciated. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're now going on to our board appointments. I think there's some sections here that we can move through relatively quickly. I want to take each of the board appointments, so one at a time. CPTA board, we have one opening, and we have one applicant, and that's Mr. L.C. Hoggett, Lewis Hoggett III, for
is being recommended to continue on that board. What is your pleasure?
I make a motion to approve Mr. Hunter.
Motion from Commissioner Trent. Do I hear a second? Second from Commissioner Atkins. All those, any further discussion? No. All those in favor of L.C. Hawkett continuing that position, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. The next is the VCOM board. Again, we have one opening, and Mr. John Powell was in that position. The board has recommended renewing his tenure there. His application was in our package. We've got a chance to see it. All those, what is your pleasure on that?
Make a motion to move forward, Mr.
Second.
Move the proper second, Commissioner Trent, Commissioner Lee. Any further discussion on that? Okay. All those in favor of John Powell continuing his position there, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. The third, similar situation at Rivers East. Ron Robinson holds the existing position. They recommended his that he would continue. And at this time, we don't have any other applicants. So what is your pleasure?
I make a motion to move forward, Mr. Brown.
Second.
Commissioner Trent and Commissioner Lee. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of Ron Robinson continuing that position, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Nay. Oh, ayes have it. I want to say one thing to the public. In these three cases, we've continued people who are in there. You need to know, citizens, anytime you are interested in serving on any board within the county, you don't have to wait till someone comes to you and ask you if you're willing to serve. If there's an area that you're willing to serve, you can put your name in the hat. Fill out an application. You can do it in advance. You want to serve on a service, social services board. You want to serve on the health care, whatever. Put your name in the hat so when that opening comes up, that we will consider you. If you have experience, that's great. Maybe you just have an interest that you want to pursue. So I would encourage you to, we don't like to keep the same people all the time. We like to get new blood and new involvement. So please, take advantage of that if you will. Okay. Next on our consent agenda, we have some minutes that we would like to consider. I'm going to ask us to, if there's no objection, to look at items 1 through 5, and that's approved minutes for the regular meeting, 7:13, approved minutes for closed session, 7:13, approved minutes for emergency meeting, 7:23, approved minutes for work session, 8:10, and approved minutes for closed session, 8:10. You've had a chance to see these. We've had feedback from our legal team on these. Those additions have been made. What is your pleasure?
Make a motion to approve those minutes.
Okay. And that is for all 5. That's correct? Great. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving minutes numbers 1 through 5, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Nay. Ayes have it. Approved. Registered deeds report. We see that this is 2 months combined for
Mr.
the registered.
Martin, yes. I don't think you meant to, but you said 1 through 5. You mean 1 through 6 for emergency?
No, I actually meant 1 through 5 because there were 5 minutes here. On the one copy that I have, 6 was the registered deeds report.
Okay, well, copy I've got to show 6. So
yeah, yeah, but I think that's
been an alteration.
Yeah, been an alteration, that's correct. So the registered deeds report is actually for 2 months. So what is your pleasure on that registered deeds report?
I make a motion we approve okay. For first month, July and August.
Okay, Commissioner Lee, do I hear a second? Second, Commissioner Trent. Any discussion concerning those? I would take a look at the number of people getting married. I always do that. <Run his cap. laughs> All those in favor of approving registered deeds report July and August, please say aye. Those opposed, they may. Ayes have it. Thank you. A lot of folks get married in this cap. That's a good thing. Okay. Budget amendments. Let me ask first, William, because we always want to get your feedback. I know we had it in front of us. Are there any significant areas that we should be concerned with in the budget?
Actually, the only budget amendment is one, and it was like FEMA reimbursement for cleaning the EMS building.
Okay, we have. Okay. So, great, it is. And we're pleased with that, no issues. Okay, great. So we have one amendment.
I make a motion we approve the budget amendment.
Second. Commissioner Lee, Commissioner Trent with the second. No discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Great. Last time at our last meeting, we looked at the commissioner's meeting schedule for 2021, local holidays, et cetera. You have that in your package. Juan asked us to take a look at that at this meeting to see if we had any objections, any changes, et cetera. So the floor is open to suggest any changes that you would have. Any changes needed? Hearing none.
Well, I think Pfizer is in the book with us. There were some to be announced. We were not designated. I mean, there were no
the locations you mentioned,
correct.
And that's primarily because of COVID.
Yeah,
you know, lately
okay.
We've been staying
that's
here.
And he picked those up.
Gotcha.
And I think you need to keep on staying here until we get COVID.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So
there is really good.
Well, because of Zoom,
I mean,
taking all that on the road would be difficult.
It'd be very difficult.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we don't need really that. We can set. We're going to do this by just consensus, right? No changes recommended. So it'll be a consensus one. We'll approve the account.
Is Commissioner Baysmore still with us?
Great. Commissioner Baysmore, you there? Sorry, Pitch was up here for a while.
I'm here.
Okay, don't want to leave. Don't definitely want to leave you out. Do you any changes or in that schedule that you saw that were concerning to you?
No.
Okay. We all had a chance to look at it. I don't think they had anything major other than what you raised last time, Tammy. We could have just addressed that again. So by consensus, we'll go forward with that one. Okay. The 2019-2020 settlement statement for the 2020 charge of the tax levy. Is that Joey?
Yes, it's Joey, and I'm not sure if he's on the call, but all it is pretty much for 1920, just a matter of, according to general statute, we have to publish. I mean, have to reflect those individuals who are delinquent.
We posted those, right?
Yes. The general statute says our minutes have to reflect.
I'm sure 1920 has been posted because it comes in the newspaper, that little thing.
Okay, I haven't seen it. I don't know.
That's been in. Oh, you have to see
it. Gotcha. I couldn't confirm that.
Like an obituary.
And then the 2021 charge of the tax levy, you pretty much just give Jody the authority to start collecting.
We did not do that in the last meeting. No, we did.
Jody, are you there?
Jody? Yes. He's not asking, so we need to give him the though, right?
Motion.
Yes, we do.
I make a motion.
For year 2021, right? Okay, any opposition or any other discussion of that? All those in favor? Say aye. All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Now, our Generator Tax Administrator is now charged with tax levy for 2020-2021. Okay? Now, also the release of the tax journal. What's there?
The tax journal should be.
That's just the list that he put it.
Yes.
Listed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That's right. You got that. Okay, great. Now, discussion items. This is one that I'm glad that we have this on the agenda, and I asked Mitch to be here and also to speak to this. Let me just kind of set this up a little bit to make sure we're clear on all of the facts. This has to do with the $10,000 that the Mideast is saying that Vertee owes as a part of the matching dollars for the disaster relief coordinator. Now, this affected three counties, Pitt, Beaufort, and Vertee. And it included two electric co-ops, Roanoke Electric and the one in Beaufort County, kind of Beaufort and a little bit of Pitt now, River Street. All of them have paid. We're the only one that has not. The two county managers of the county says yes, they were informed that they would have to match. So were the two electric co-ops. In fact, the reason that Roanoke Electric got involved because it was going to help Vertee. So, and as you know, we asked, that had never come before this board. We asked the prior county manager, Scott Sauer, if, in fact, he was aware of this, and it, I think his first response was he did not recall being asked that there was a matching fee piece. But when we had our last meeting, he said that he knows Scott saying yes, he was not, his language was no, he was not asked, or he was not aware of that. Now, Brian Buck, who says yes, he said, I told Scott, just like I told all the other parties, that they were clear. So we're the only ones who said we were not clear. But there were some troubling things when we looked at, well, what value were they bringing to us? And we received an email from Brian saying, well, these were the things that we have done and we're working on for you. And there was some discrepancy around some of those things, that we didn't get all we thought we were getting. So I cannot decide what we cannot decide, the right or wrong, about whether or not our prior county manager was told or not. All we know is that we were not consulted on this. He says he was not. The others say that they were. I can't resolve that piece. I don't think we can. But the question to me is, should we be involved in this? And should we be going forward? The Mideast, you know, helps us with an awful lot of projects. They're now just their next project because they received $500,000 for COVID, and that some of that money can be used for now some other things other than the typical COVID. So, because there were only three counties involved, I, as the chairman of the Mideast, cannot ask the Mideast to eat that money because those other two counties had nothing to do with this. If we say no, we're not going to pay it, then I'm going to have to go back to the other two counties and to Roanoke Electric, and to River Street, and ask them to come up with the additional funds. Because we've already employed the person, and I cannot ask those two counties who are not involved in order to pay part of that expense. So it is our decision what we do. Mitch, I will ask you to speak to this, if you will.
Like we spoke about earlier, the only thing that I've got the any skin in the game was after the fact, I was presented with the opportunity to go to ECU to have our plan looked at, which was a review done by a graduated class at ECU. I think that they done a good job for what I was expecting, but you know, the letter states that we got a full EOP review and we got a vulnerable population site set up and then our shelter prep set up. That's not what we got. We got a red line document from the students about some meetings that I had with them, Victoria had with them, about some weaknesses that we identified and we thought we needed to work on. But for a promise that we got a full EOP review and an updated EOP, that's not what the county got. They did not receive that. And for the vulnerable population registry that was set up, internally through our staff. We tested it out on our staff before we sent it out publicly. We set it up ourselves with SurveyMonkey, and our shelter preparation was done one day at lunch. We were sitting on a napkin drawing out what we needed, and we found some U-boat carts from China somewhere that was for sale for $100, and they would make it where we could saran wrap our equipment and then mobilize it within a couple of hours instead of taking a couple of days to load equipment.
Expense was
a
lot less than we
did,
right?
I mean,
you were
thinking
that we got $10,000
worth of product. At this time, no. I mean, $10,000, I would have hoped that we'd have got, you know, we just paid $16,000 for a fire study. I would have expected something, a finished product to put on the table. But that is not what was sold. I was told I was getting a free review to help me and look at it. So, I mean, I don't know what's moving forward, what opportunities else are out there, or what else this grant does. I'm not really for sure, other than the letters I've seen come in and tell me what I got that y'all suspected to have to pay for. That's not what we got.
Speak to what your the need that you have within the department that you're going to have to farm out.
I mean, we have needs. I mean, if they... For $10,000, if they want to rewrite our EOP and update it and put it online and do it like it's supposed to, now I'm 100% game for that. Because that's, you know, we need that.
If you can't do it, and we're going to have to get somebody to do it.
We don't have the manpower to do it. Right.
Do they have the qualifications to do it? That's my question, because everything, like you just told us, they didn't give us what they said they were going to give you.
We need to have a planner involved with it.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, we need to specify what his qualifications are and how can they help us get to that point and update that EOP. You know, we got long-term recovery coming up. There might be an opportunity there, but I don't know what we're looking for.
See, to me, there was a big disconnect here. The disconnect was that we had a letter that was written from the commission to Juan, because it had not been paid, and they said, well, this is what we did. But the letter did not actually come from the folks who did the work. Because when we got them on the phone, they readily admitted, oh, no, we didn't do that. What we did was this, which they did for all the counties. So it's not like they promised us something different than they promised anybody else. Everybody else got the same thing. But we didn't. Somebody told us in a letter trying to get payment that this is what occurred, and it's not what occurred. So,
what's the explanation about why the contract, I'm assuming the contract was never signed, was that this contract?
No, the contract was signed, it came before us. The contract was signed by the Mideast, all they needed to have was the authorization that each county was going to do their part. And according to Mideast, he got verbals from all five.
There was a contract in place for a signature.
The contract is to the Mideast. It was a place for somebody
from the county signature.
That fact that we were going to be involved in it, and we never got that.
No.
Even though it was asked for, but we never got it.
But I did not have the authority to go under a contract like that. So, and Scott, I don't believe, would have done that without.
Here's
the thing, when they didn't get an approval and payment, then that's when they sent the letter to Juan saying, hey, we don't have your signature.
I got it in
November.
Well, when was it sent to the county for a signature?
November 1st, 2019.
When they wanted Bill paid. Finance officer. You got something else? Go ahead.
I wanted to just ask the question, since there's two other counties involved, my concern is, were those commissioners approached when y'all were not, and was it presented to them to get signatures?
Talk to both.
Why come they didn't come to us?
No, in a county board meeting.
No.
That's first my question.
Yes, this is my dilemma. Why would the director of the meetings go to the other two counties, to their county managers, tell them, and their boards did it, also went to Roanoke Electric, also went to River Street, and all of them say, oh, we knew. Why would he not tell us?
Was it approved in those other two counties? At a board meeting?
Yes. The managers took it and they voted on it. We did not do that here. We had no idea. But do we want it or do we not want it? We don't want to go forward. So we don't want the help from Mideast in this area. I want to be clear on this. We do not want the help from Mideast on disaster recovery. But that's what we're saying. And I'll ask the other counties to pay our portion. That's what we want. I think that's a mistake.
I think it would be nice if we could get what we promised to us, which we did not get.
And all we have to do, Mitch, is to say to them, yes, Mitch and I talk about this. Tell them what we want. If we want them to do that whole study, let's say we want them to do that study. What if the other county did it? How big is that? And vote for it.
I would do a whole lot for 30,000. I mean, are they qualified to do it?
All I know is they're doing it for the other two counties, which are much bigger than us and have much more resilient needs in terms of it and vote for it. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know that.
Well, if many states to the other counties, did they come to board meetings or did they come?
It went to the county manager, and the county manager then took it to the board, they voted on it, and then they paid the bill. I asked that question up front. Who did you talk to? They talked to, he says, I talked to all three of the county managers. Right?
But we are the only ones who did not respond, like you said, with the signature, or it never went before our board. He had no idea that it had not gone before our board. He was just saying, where's my payment?
But it didn't have a contract.
That he never got it back.
That was my question. Why did they do that?
Greg, I don't know if he did or not. I know he asked for it, the contract and the payment. But he asked for it together. He didn't ask for it.
Well, is any of the information you get from them, was it helpful to you at all?
I mean, what the students did was, I'm not going to say it won't help them, but, you know, my plan was over the next couple of years is to take that and try and start adapting it into our merchant operation plan, because if you went out and hired a contractor tomorrow, you might spend $20,000-$25,000 trying to get it rewritten.
But you can't use that, can you? What they gave you, you can't use.
We can put it in there. I can take their recommendations and look at it and then craft it for what our county needs and put it in there, but it won't be written by, it'll be us altering our plan, not a planner altering our plan.
Let's be clear, that's what I'm saying, Mr. Rich. But we can also ask them to do it for.
I mean, if they can do it, then.
Mr. Watson, may I ask a question?
Yes.
On page 113 of the minutes, there's a list. Supposedly what the committee is going to do with citizens getting a $200,000 grant. And they also, subsequent to that, told the county, for again, we could pay them two payments of $5,000 each, because it's a two-year grant.
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily talking about a retroactive payment like we determined is illegal before. But what can they do? Have they spent the whole $200,000, I guess, legally, is my question, because if you're going to get something in the future from the grant, then it's perfectly legitimate. If you're trying to, it looked like somebody was trying to justify something with that letter. And I don't know who wrote the letter, but I don't care. But what I'm saying is, if you've got more contact with Mideast than anybody here, but when we read it, our thought was, well, okay, if there's still pie out there for us to get, and I hate to use such a colloquial term, it's perfectly fine. If they're just trying to dun us back for something they didn't do, then you do have a legal problem with it.
This is a two-year grant.
Right.
We're not even through year one. Now, when they sent the letter, they didn't ask for $10,000. They said, wonder why they had to get paid. They said, if you have a problem paying us, just give us $5,000.
$2,000.
I just wanted to get paid something for the grant because it was ongoing. The question that to me is, do we want to continue to do work with them in this area using that grant and the person that they brought in to do it?
Well, I mean, they listed 13 different things they were going to do. I'm assuming y'all read them or skimmed them.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know how applicable they were or not. That, I guess that's a Mitch.
Well, the end result would be this guy right here tells us how those 13 things have been done.
Right. Well, I mean,
where we're at with it, or where we're at.
Right.
So that's my question. That's where I need answers on.
I just have a really problem with them not following the process of approval. And they had no signed contract. Did not come before this board. There was no follow-up on their part to make sure that all that had taken place before they hired the person.
Let's leave out the part that there was no follow-up, because important Brian Hook, there was follow-up to Scott, and he never got any out.
There was no follow-up to this board, this approval.
He does not, we should not expect the Mideast director to follow with us. He works through the county manager. He, after not getting any response from Scott, so he says, that's why he went to Juan. Because Juan was now here and Scott was gone. But he never got any response. So I'm just saying, that's his side of the story.
Well, if I was expecting a contract and I didn't get it, I would have picked up the phone for him as your board approved it. Where's my contract?
There's those 13 things that they
did.
The
only thing is, Lisa showed up from Mideast Commission. We went into the commissioner's room. She said, I was hired on a grant. I'm here to help you for free. These are things that I could probably help you with. We identified the three things. We done two of them on our own. We got a red line copy of suggestions we made to the students from them. I showed them to the county manager. You physically seen them. That's what we received back. And I considered it to be There was
three things they were supposed to do.
I didn't know. I don't know. It was 2 years. I don't know how long it goes. If it goes forward, it's fine. We'll look at it. We'll work on it. But that's what was presented to me.
And but that, you did two out of the three.
I did two out of the three. And I came here in front of the board in October or November, one of the two, and told the board that we were going to ECU for free to review the EOP.
It's right on the phone. That's what happened. Now they want to know now, do we want to be included in this long form or do we not? Simple question.
What's the thoughts, Mitch?
I will pass up any opportunity for our county. I'm not privy to all the information that y'all are as far as what contracts were, who said what.
Well, actually, the contractor out of the question right now is you are privy. You got more information than we got.
I got presented three things. I did two of them myself, and the other one for somebody to write in a letter that they come in here and reviewed our EOP and did a third review and a finished product is not true.
Thank you.
Could we have the presentation presented to us that we didn't get? To make us decide whether we want to continue or not. So they tell us what they plan on doing for us.
We had the last meeting, they had the person that was hired.
We had a lot of discussion about what was done and what wasn't done.
That's correct. But remember what they also said is that we were willing to do those 13 things were things that they thought they had the expertise to do, right? And of those three that Mitch wanted, only one of those was partially done at best. The other things were not touched. They say they have the expertise to do that. Now, do we
trust that? The $10,000, correct?
Oh, yeah, that's 2 years of
okay, but my point is, that he's done two out of the three because they didn't do them, and one was partially done. So we didn't get a product, correct?
Only got what was the piece that was partially done. That's all we got.
I make a motion that we do not go forward.
I second.
Been moved and properly second that we do not go forward with the payment, so we are no longer part of this study with the committees. All those in favor, I'm going to poll the board. All those in favor, let me poll the board. Commissioner Atkins. Commissioner Lee.
Aye.
Commissioner Trent.
Aye.
Commissioner Baysmore.
I would like to pay.
We have three votes already. That's the majority. So we will tell them that we will not pay this. I will go to run a collection and see if they'll pay the portion that we don't and the other two. And we understand. I want to make sure that you hear this. So the funds that they now get through the resilience study, we are not a part of those three counties in that grant, in those funds. So, okay. Now, the next one here is the 2020 Fall Winter Surplus Property Auction. What?
Yes, sir. So for some time now, there have been some department heads who have some surplus property that they want to get rid of. There are some old ambulances in EMS. There are a couple of generators in the water department. There are a number of cars, over 10 cars, that the Sheriff's Department has, and there are over 18 parcels of property. And upon your approval, there's a handout that you all have, and in order for us to move forward with this, there will be two motions that we need in order to move forward. One motion being that you declare this property surplus property, and also even tentatively set forth the date of Saturday, November 14th as the auction day. However, I would like to recommend that we don't actually have a in-person auction. I would like to see us have an online auction for a number of reasons, but one being primarily that because of the pandemic. And then the second motion would be that you allow us to move forward with completing the drafted resolutions that we have here, just outlining our plans to move forward with the personal property and the real property.
Would it take the resolution first, or
we can do numbers declaring this property surplus property first, and as well as the tentative date of Saturday, November 14th.
All right.
So, what is your question, Bill? I make a motion to move forward as county manager suggested.
That's two motions, though. We want to move first with the portion of declaring the property surplus and that date. That's the first piece, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's Saturday, November the 14th, and the list of items in chapter 40 that there will be declared surplus. All those in favor of that? All those opposed say nay. Ayes have it. And the second piece is that whether or not you want to do that in a virtual environment.
Well, actually, the resolution actually gives us the option to go online or to do it in person, but the resolution just sets forth the date, pretty much the details of the auction, and as well as saying that we have to advertise. For personal property, there's a requirement to advertise at least 10 days, and for real property, at least 30 days. So that's in the
resolution. So that's part of the requirement, so we don't need to vote on it.
Yes, if you will motion to for us to move forward with these resolutions.
Okay.
Second.
Moved and properly second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Well, let's check to make sure we don't already have a standing contract with the company that we've used for the last, I know, 4 or 5 years. Remember the problem was the firm going out, I think, out of Washington. You know,
we do. Jonathan and I were talking about this afternoon. We don't think we have a contract with, I can't think of his name. We would.
John's got some face in my head right now.
Yeah, I
know. It was Bill Forbes with United Forbes Realty.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you don't think we have one, right?
No, sir.
Okay.
Good. I think we've done it specifically each time, because there have been boards that discussed using somebody else. You're the first one to go.
So is that something that's going to be advertised as far as bringing somebody else on board? I mean, we got bid that or anything? Or
no, not for this. It doesn't amount to enough.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
It's not enough money.
Thank you.
But, I mean, what one's talking about doing is doing like Country Boys Auction does, having an online auction.
No, I understand all that. But, again, not using the guy we've been using, but we have to.
Will you check tomorrow? Yes, if. You don't have to put that out to bid. That's a personal service contract.
Okay.
Less than the amount that.
But there's a part that we absolutely have to do, which is to make sure that citizens, you know, like they always send out a list of the maps of the property and all this kind of stuff, all the specifics about the property.
And one, we've got
real
a list.
Property.
We've got a list of 40 people that we send every tax foreclosure to, and Jonathan's preparing that for you.
Great.
If you decide to go virtual, and I called today to try to get Country Boys. I didn't think I could get it, and I couldn't, because there's several thousand. But.
Well, it'd be nice to use somebody that's got business here for a few times.
We do it, we're going to have to post those sites and
everything else. You'll have to prepare a sign that says this property's going to be sold online. Such and such a day, such and such time, give the website. And I'm assuming you view the county website.
Is there a process for people who want to view this stuff prior to?
That's what I'm talking about, Greg. We have to put them out there so they know what they are, where they are, so they can go and view it.
And say how many days they're going to have to do.
10 and 30.
So make sure it's back.
So, yes. So we have to advertise. So I think that's what we're talking about. Sorry, slightly two different things. We do have to advertise, absolutely. But in terms of allowing people to come, we can designate a point of contact so that if people want to come and see certain things, we can say, if you want to come see it in person, we can allow them to do that. But we definitely, General Satcher said, we have to advertise for 10 and 30 days for real and personal property.
Yeah. But I was kind of talking about the real property out there.
Mm-hmm.
So where they are. We have some real property there, right?
Correct.
So
Okay, so
that's we're good with that. Okay, great. Now, last thing on this, under, no, we have one other number three was alternative suggestions for the 2020-2023 luncheon, the yearly service awards. We knew that with COVID coming, we would not likely be able to do, you know, what we normally would do, large gatherings, and we're thinking about different kind of things. A lot of folks have been thinking about it.
Exactly. And I'll let Sarah usually plan that. And again, like you said, Chairman, because we are faced with COVID, we were thinking of alternatives to do. And Sarah has come up with some suggestions for moving forward. And it's kind of two different pieces. And one is, what will we do on that that actual day that we set aside for the employee appreciation luncheon? And along with that, the parade, you know, usually the parade is on the same day. And right now, we're not certain that that will actually take place. So in addition to what we're planning for that day, we also have to think about what we will do to recognize our employees. So Sarah, if you could share your thoughts and what we've been discussing on that.
Sure, yeah. So for the luncheon itself, you know, you guys know what we normally do. It's a sit-down meal that's catered for our staff, usually at the Cash Eye Center. Obviously, that's not going to work with COVID, so I had just come up with possibly having one of our Bertie County food trucks set up, maybe in the parking lot of the Cash Eye Center, since it can accommodate the amount of vehicles that we would need. Our staff could show up sometime between 12:30 when our office is closed, and maybe say 2 or 2:30 in the afternoon to grab a meal from the truck and then either take it back to work if they want to work that afternoon, or if they want to take it home and participate that way. The other option was to just give our staff no strings attached that afternoon, basically like we did on Friday before Labor Day. Have the offices closed at 12:30 and our staff can go home from there, or if they choose to stay at work, that's also a possibility. As far as honoring our folks who are reaching certain milestones, I know you guys would hate for them to miss out on that recognition, because we do have several folks who are reaching some of the higher milestones at the county. So to better recognize them, I thought about doing some kind of Facebook profile spotlights on some of those folks, so that all of our citizens are aware of how committed some of our, how committed our staff members are and what milestones they're reaching this year. I could also incorporate video in some way where we talk to some of their coworkers, or we talk to the staff member in general and they share some of their favorite memories working for Bertie County. I think it could be a really uplifting project if we did this, and it lets our citizens get to know our staff as well, the folks who work behind the scenes. So these are all just ideas. I'm just brainstorming, and all of this kind of stems from the luncheon and what we normally do. So,
yeah. So those are some good suggestions. I shared one with Juan. This is not an original thought on my part. It's something that was done elsewhere. But what they did, and they have been doing this for a while, they asked every department to do a little 5-minute segment on their department, their accomplishments, what they have been involved in. They wanted to recognize any individual people in the department. Each department did one. They did a video. And that video was on the county site, so not only other county employees could see it, but citizens could see it as well. It was a 5-minute quick thing. And all of them did some different things, which was kind of cute, right? Whether they just, you know, recognized some individuals, some just talked about things they worked on. And then they got the half a day. So the people got to see, because this is a recognition, and not just, you know, we want to recognize the departments for the things that they do and the people that are in those departments. So, I mean, that's something to think about. I don't know, you know, quick 5-minute video, each department that could be on the site, everybody could see it, and give them the half day off too would be something to think about anyway.
Yeah, that's where my brain was going. I love the food truck idea, but I do think we need to add the afternoon off to that. And one thing that Albemarle Regional Health does every month, those employees that are reaching that 5-year or 10-year milestone, they bring them into the meeting. So we could bring those employees into our first meeting in December and give them their pin and certificate. And we can do it. It was really difficult this last meeting because we did this by Zoom, but the employees were in Lewiston City, and they had difficulty not overdoing the minimum amount of people in the room, so they managed to get it done. But yeah, I mean, you could bring them in to the meeting, and we could recognize them in our meeting.
So we got a little bit of time, right? So, sir, are you going to continue to look at the options and then come back to us again, or what's the next step?
Right. We just wanted to really get your feedback and know exactly which way you all wanted to go, and if it was Sarah had the idea of polling the employees. But it sounds like you all think it's a good idea to kind of have a combination of all of what Sarah suggested in terms of the food truck, probably afternoon off, and then some type of recognition for our department.
I think recognition part is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. You know, giving them time off, that's great. But mm-hmm. recognition, recognizing people for the hard work that they've done, mm-hmm. a lot of great work in this department. I like the idea of them telling us rather than us telling them what, mm-hmm. what their recognition should or what they've done.
Okay.
You know, suggestions, again, not original thought. All right. So we normally do that in
December.
In December. So, sir, do you just want to say you perhaps, you know, talk among the staff, or if you do a survey or whatever, then come back to us at some point to let us know what your thoughts are?
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to.
Okay. All right. Is everybody satisfied with that? That would be great. Okay. Last thing under discussion area is a census update from Tracy. Tracy, you there?
Tracy was here. She had something come up and she had to leave the meeting a little early, but she will definitely send an email out tomorrow, and we will make sure to forward that to the board so they're aware of the latest census information.
And did we see the latest ones? You know, she had something more recent than we gave us not long ago.
I think what I gave you was towards the end of
last week. Yeah, last week. So
I don't think it's much different from that at this point.
We were about 10 percentage points off the state average.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. She was also just going to note that towards the end of this month, we're getting down to the wire in terms of being counted. We are expecting, you know, once everything is done, we're expecting the count to be somewhat higher than what's being reported right now. But September 30th is pretty much it. So people are going door to door now.
The good part about it is prior to that, the state average didn't move very much, but we jumped big time. So we're still about 10 points off, though.
Yes.
So that's where we moved up a lot. We moved up an awful lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We jumped a lot. And we gave some feedback to Tracy about some other ideas at the last meeting that she was going to try to implement, right?
Yes.
And I was hoping to hear from that.
And our business liaison is planning to attend this week, sometime coming up soon. They will be in Tracy out on those details, but the liaison will be at the food bank to pass out flyers and encourage people to.
I'd still like to complete an update from Tracy to us, would be something in writing mm-hmm. about what's our plan to get beyond where we are. Right? And how we close the gap. We may not be able to get all the way there, but you know, are we implementing those things that we suggested, or maybe new things that will get us there? Just to give us an update.
Yes,
sir. Okay. Great. Anything else around that? Okay. Commissioner reports. Commissioner Trent.
Yes. I'd like to say that Mickey Mark Correctional Facility, the officers over there, doing an excellent job. We had an individual required by the Sheriff's Department that had out for attempted murder. He advised deputies that he was positive for COVID and assessed in New Jersey. He directly sent into the emergency room and be tested prior to him coming to our jail. And we just got the results back the other day, and he did test positive. But he is non-symptoms, no symptoms, no temperature. So it's the first one I've heard like it, where he was quarantined on 9 yards, and now this is a real test for the system that we put in there. Okay, so we'll see where it goes from there. But again, the charges were felony charges, capital felony charges, and exactly. He was not constant. Do not contract this in Berkeley County or at Berkeley County Mark County.
Okay. Commissioner Bazemore?
Yes. I would like to say that maybe perhaps we can invest in a better system so I can hear you clearly. You're not, y'all really not coming in clear. And also, I think it would be a good gesture if we were to put an ad in the paper thanking all those that donated, individuals, companies, not by name, but just a great big thank you, because it was so wonderful to see how Bertie County came together. And a couple of pictures of those have been, that have their units are back in place or they're back in a home. Just to let the community know that we are resilient and we are putting it back together. That's all.
That's a great suggestion, Commissioner. And you said for the newspaper, we could also do it on our site and our Facebook page and everything else too, right?
Yes, yes, definitely.
Great. Commissioner Lee?
The only thing, library is not the library. I've got the library on because we haven't had an update lately, but the airport is moving right along. Right now, we have slowed down a little bit, waiting on windows and doors. We were about 4 weeks behind schedule, I think, but I'm not sure if that, they keep telling me, we're going to make up that time, but, we were looking forward to a November opening, and that's probably not going to happen. We do have all the furniture picked out and the pricing for each room, so if there's any companies out there that want to sponsor a room, we would love to have you. We hired an interior decorator, and she has picked out some great stuff, so I'm excited. Everything else is by Zoom, and not a lot happens.
Commissioner, I just have a few things I'd like to share with you. First of all, around COVID, again, Mitch, I think your team and all the other different accounting departments that have been, when I say COVID, I mean not just COVID, but also the hurricane and tornado, just departments, taking part in and being a part of, making things better. It's been outstanding. I mean, it truly has. I did nothing but raise from some citizens and from other counties looking at what we're doing, and it's almost magical, man. It's been a lot of hard work, but I think people respect the fact that we've done that work in a real, real way. So I think everybody's doing it. Around COVID in particular, though, I sent everybody out. Representative Goodwin is sponsoring some legislation in the new budget that will give $500,000 to public schools through six counties. And that's really important. Our superintendent worked with him and challenged him to help us get this funding, because right now we cannot get meals out to our student population. Their parents have to come in and get them from the schools. We were able to do that at the end of the school year because there was a grant for that. We don't have that anymore. I'm not using the other. That's a problem. So Representative Goodwin has proposed us $500,000. Also, $5 million to the community college system that will do a lot of things. And one of the pieces that we did not invest in with Mark in particular was that connectivity piece, so that we could do more of the classes here at Bertie from, that would be our classes here, online. And so that's a piece of that. So that's nice. Around the housing issue, first of all, a lot of you didn't get a chance to hear the presentation about Rebuild North Carolina. What you need to know about this is that the residents who qualify for FEMA relief that did not get addressed, I mean, there was not a buyout, there was not a elevation. There were about 90 of those who were approved, but FEMA had not moved on that. So what Rebuild North Carolina did is they went through those 90, identified 70 individuals, homeowners, who they are going to do the repairs. They have built right now 8 or 9 new homes, and they're handling the complete teardowns first and the replacements before they do the repairs. So there are 70, including rebuild and repairs. They've done about 7 or 8 of the new houses.
These houses are up to $210,000. You should go take a look at them. This is really quality work. State bill. They replaced the trailers with the modular kind of trailers, the single unit, high pitch roof modulars. And they've done about 12 of those. They still are going to do the rest. We don't have the schedule. We've asked for the list. You don't have it yet, right, Mark?
No.
Of the 70. But they still have $45 million left. We went to the governor, Mitch, and asked, could our 41 homes, be included under Rebuild North Carolina because they got the money, thinking that maybe that's a home run. But he said he did not have that authority. That would have to go to the legislature. Okay. But, and that may still happen. Our teacher housing project is now back on. Got a call from Scott Southern with the State Employees Credit Union. That money is still there for us, $2.2 million. He spoke to Golden League, who took back that $240,000 grant that said they may be willing to reinstate it to us. But we may likely have to form a new 501c3 because it had to be through a 501c3. Our representative, Eric Smith, has also entered legislation, HR 1105, in the education, not the education bill, but the education funding that would include this project. So whichever one of those comes first, doesn't matter to us, right? If we get approval to do it, the money will be there and we could continue with the project. And again, I have another approximately $8,550 that will be going to the relief fund this week. $2,550 for Martin Community College, $1,000 from Violet. Got a call from a department head at Violet, said I got some extra money in my budget, write a letter, ask for $1,000, and we'll get it to you. I did that, then come back. The State Missionary Baptist Association has $5,000 that they're going to donate to us in addition to some other gift cards that they have. And William, one of those things is coming to you. That's through the community, the GoFundMe account. You got the email about that. So that's going to come to you so you can draw that money down. The other ones will come in for my check. And so that's my advice. County manager.
Yes, I have just a few quick things, and I'll start with the Library Cooperative Extension Facility. We are a little bit, well, a bit behind with that project. Of course, initially the date was October, it moved to November, but now it's even going to be later than that. There has been some exposure to COVID, some of the subcontractors, so that's one reason for a number of delays. Once we get a more definite date as to when we are should expect completion, I will let you all know. But that it has not been confirmed to ship.
Do those delays cost us money?
No.
I thought if it did, then
no.
It could be applied to our COVID loss.
No.
No? We don't in any kind of way?
If so, I'll see about the COVID.
Right. If there is a factor,
but
if it changes our price and our contract and our bill, I don't know what happens.
I don't know if the price changed, but there's a stipulation in there that if they don't meet your guidelines, you could actually possibly penalize the company.
Penalize them?
Yeah, right.
Wrong word.
That's why I have a lawyer in here.
I wouldn't want to go after Martin.
Same thing with one of the local contractors.
They want to use them again.
Yeah. I thought it might be
the advantage
to us if they were
in cost. Right, but no, it's in cost. Okay. Robin Payne, our Tall Glass of Water Project consultant, is still looking for funds for Tall Glass of Water. She recently attended a webinar on coastal resiliency, and they have a statewide program for counties and municipalities. And the next step is for us to be invited, and that should happen within the next 30 days. She's excited because we're ahead of the game because of Dr. Riggs and all the work that he's put in. I attended a virtual meeting with Jeannie Bowen and from MIDI and everyone in the court consortium, and something that I brought up there was our career work center not being open here in the county. And I'm planning to follow up with the meeting with her soon, And so if you have any suggestions of where we, because again, just refresh your memory, the issue was they were, the rent that they were paying over here was a lot. And so that was their reason for closing. But if we can identify another property, some of the options, they said they'd be more happy to.
As a new update, they have had a meeting with Norman and the community college.
Mm-hmm.
The community college is going to offer space in that building so that they can use that building at free or minimum cost. And the cost might just be a little couple of for cleaning.
Okay.
Community college is, I mean, here is offering that space to house. Now, you know, they're still planning to do the two satellite locations,
mm-hmm.
right? So the plan is to maybe do 2 days here, or three days here, and 2 days at one of the other sites. And then we're looking at Owlsville and what's the other one? Two satellite places they were looking to do out in the county. They thought that they would do 3 days here, and if they accept the space that Martin's offering, it won't cost them virtually anything. They
okay.
still want to do the satellite place. They never want to do the house there. Not sure. Maybe it's Lewis. The workforce. Yeah, so people spot jobs and stuff like that. Rather than
I
to come all the way in here, they go to them.
I got some stuff for the building. I'd love to grow.
They could be interested in
the brand.
I was thinking Reverend Corden, Reverend Chris Corden, had already said that they were coming there.
That's two sites.
Yeah.
I know what it's
about,
but I'm not sure
it's made
3 times.
They
might have
some money.
They might have any money.
I'm doing the construction.
I think that's what she's
talking about. And on the other piece, Ron, about the grants on Tower Glass Water,
mm-hmm.
one of the grants that Robin was looking for was the Attorney General's grant, right?
Mm-hmm.
$150,000. So she asked me to reach out to the governor. I reached out to the governor. Governor talked directly to Josh Stein, who then asked Mary Jo, Mary Jo, his regional person from here, to talk to the Attorney General as well, and she did. So the hope is that we will get very, very strong consideration for that grant. And I think if we got that piece out of our standing by those, we'll be around $16,000. Very
fast. Okay. We're about 5 weeks away from early voting. Early vote starts October 15th through October 31st. So I want to remind you all of our joint meeting with Martin, Showan, and Jail Commission. September 29th, it will be at the Cash Eye Convention Center at 7 o'clock. So September 29th, 7 o'clock, Cash Eye Convention Center. And then I just want to say thank you to the board for rewarding us and allowing the county employees to have half a day on last Friday, although some of us were still working. I think it was a great morale booster. And I want to thank Mitch and EMS, all of the departments, honestly, have really put forth so much effort going above and beyond, not doing what their job is, but doing extra stuff to accommodate the needs of our citizens that were impacted by the by the tornado. So thank you. They've done a great job.
County attorney?
No, sir.
Okay. That leaves one thing, Sarah, on the agenda, and that is for citizens' comments again. So if you would open up or tell us if we have any that are still waiting or that have already come to you.
As of right now, I do not have any additional public comments, but if you'd like me to wait a couple of minutes, I can certainly.
Just a couple of minutes, Sarah. If anything comes through, if you see something on the way, let us know. But I want to give citizens anything they've heard or any questions or whatever, give them that opportunity. All right.
Thank you.
Sarah, anything at all?
No, sir. I have no additional public comments.
Okay, great then. We, County Manager said we do have a closed session, right? So, Sarah, we're going to have to take a have a motion to go into closed session.
General
Session is 143.318-1186.
Okay. Excuse me. Oops. Excuse me. Do I have the information for Zoom in closed session?
Yeah, thanks, sir. I was just going to say that. Sarah is going to give that.
Don't hang up.
Everybody else off. You'll still be there. You should still be there.
Okay.
Right. No, okay. No board members need to take action. I'm going to take action on my end by putting all of the folks in the waiting room until we return to open session. So no one needs to do anything at this point except me.
Let us know when you're ready. So have a motion to go to closed session?
We already did that.
All right. Give me just 1 second.
It's been a rough week around my house. It's been a rough week.
Okay, at this time, it's just myself as the host and the phone downstairs that you guys are using in the commissioner's room, and then Commissioner Bazemore on the line for closed session.